Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
it's Leave It In the Ring.
Welcome back to another edition of Leave It in the Ring, my boxing fans' official radio show. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with your host, Gabriel Montoya. We had some good boxing matches that just passed on last week on Saturday night. Lucian Bute retained his title at 168, facing Brian McGee. You know, I got to tell you this. I wasn't a huge fan of Lucian Bute in the beginning. You know, there were still some questions there, and there's still a lot of questions, surrounding him, whether or not he is by far the best at 168. Because I'm pretty sure Andre Ward and Carl Froch will make a pretty good argument that he isn't. But seeing that he got in with McGee and doing the things that he was able to really do, but even at sometimes looked a little troublesome, you got to say that you got to like the fact and how he sets up his. His counterpunching ability, the way he used his ring generalship, and he just seems to really start to evolve into who he really is with them body shots. Three times in a row, he's already stopped somebody off clear on the button body shots that you can that you can literally sit there and go, this guy could be by far one of the best body punchers out there right now, especially at 168. He kind of baits you in by keeping his right hand low, you know, and he allows his opponents to kind of commit in coming forward because they're really looking for headshots, you know. I think they kind of clearly forget that he likes to throw, you know, counter shots to the body. So it leaves that lower body part exposed. And it's not really – he's really kind of throwing it like a hook off of that left hand where it's hooking upwards, okay, and it's catching underneath the rib. You know, where that's where it's really just taking its toll. It's lifting up the guy, and it's lifting up that lung just enough for them to gasp, lose air, and be dropped, okay? It doesn't take out the air completely out of them, but it stuns them enough where their legs go, whoa, what's going on here? This was one hell of a body shot. Lucian Bute setting up his men in the later round, McGee, baiting them in with that right hand low, countershotting with the body shot, which, like I said, it's a really sneaky body shot, and it's been working fairly well. There's talks about him and Mikael Kessler getting in the ring. Mikael coming off of two losses, one to Andre Ward and Carl Froch. It's still, though, you got to look at it as a very interesting, intriguing matchup if Mikael Kessler is in full form to get back in the ring with one of the best 168s out there out of Canada, Lucian Bute. I'm going to shine in my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. What's up, brother?
How you doing, man? And I got to correct you there. Kessler won that fight against Carl Froch, but Froch was disputing that win. But he retired because of his eye.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. It was kind of interesting on that episode of Fight Camp 360. Where he's like, well, I don't know if I could fight. I can't see out of this eye. And then he drives off in his car. You're like, wow. What are you live in Koreatown, or what's the deal? You know, it's okay to be blind and drive.
I think it was somewhere along the lines of, I can't see with this eye being in this tournament anymore. I'm going to drive away, you know, into a much brighter sunset by the name of Lucian Bute in Canada. You know, that's the thing there, Gabriel, is that if you look at this, I'm looking at Mikael Kessler, okay, and really when he got back in with Andre Ward, his feet were not underneath him. When he got in with Froch, You saw a much better performing Mikel Kessler. But with Lucian Bute, who's really a guy that has more athleticism in terms of he gets really comfortable, he gets his hands low, he really kind of he sheds down those inches of height that he has because he likes to get low and he likes to bait you in. He likes for his opponents to commit, and he likes those kind of opponents that come forward and don't know how to give angles. And Mikel Kessler, to me, just kind of spells that all out for him in terms of being the perfect opponent yet again for Lucian Bute.
Well, this is the thing I've been saying about Bute, and a lot of guys say he's the best 168-pounder, and I tend to disagree just because of his opposition. He hasn't been fighting, you know, the guys that are in the Super Six. You know, he bowed out of being in the Super Six. I mean, it was kind of, you know, Showtime kind of saying, well, I don't think he's going to fully commit to the whole tournament. He was saying he wanted to kind of pick and choose or maybe take side fights. And so they just went, you know, this guy's not fully committed. Let's get somebody else in here. And so really he chose to kind of go his own route. And I don't
right.
really blame him per se, because here's a guy that that makes a lot of money. And, you know, he makes a lot of money and fills a lot of seats in Canada. You know, when you can have that kind of environment, watching that environment, you know, like several thousand, you know, tens of thousand people watching him fight, he's making a good money, and he's fighting fights that you know we all know he's going to win, and yet the crowd doesn't seem to mind. They're very entertained. At the same time, he's in line with this three fight deal with Showtime to fight the winner of the Super Six, and now, you know, a former participant in the Super Six is Mikel Kessler. Although that's rumored, I just happen to, you know, assume that because the guy's ringside and HBO or Showtime keeps showing him that it's going to happen. In some ways, it was a very smart move, but you got to look at his opposition. He went life and death with, you know, Lobato Andrade. He ended up writing that wrong, and more power to him.
Right.
But then he goes rounds with this McGee guy, who is just a guy. You know, he's 33, and if he was going to do it, he would have done it by now. And he really, you know, didn't really have very many notable wins, if any at all. It's all about who you fight. And I referred to him, you know, this week on the next round as, you know, kind of Sven Bute, you know, kind of a reference to Sven Aki, a guy that never really had that significant win, but he was undefeated and made a lot of money, you know, fighting in his home country. And so there's an argument. It's like, well, you know, yeah, you can be undefeated, or, you know, but are you great? You know, if you're fighting these fights, you can't equate ticket sales with greatness. You know, it's a lot of times they don't even go hand in hand. You know, sometimes you can be like a Floyd Mayweather who doesn't sell out in Vegas. He does good pay-per-view numbers, but he doesn't sell out in Vegas, you know, and he's undefeated. But he's also fighting guys that he, you know, we know he can beat. Is that greatness? You know, I mean, he did it in the lower weight classes. He hasn't done it as a welterweight.
But, you know,
is that greatness? I don't know.
In terms of like, you know, I completely agree with what you're saying. You know, Lucian Bute hasn't had that defying fight to show if he has the greatness that a lot of us are hoping and looking for that he should have. But in that terms there, do you think that, I mean, because the way I look at it, I think all the guys that in the Super Six, or I mean, not even the Super Six, but 168 division, they're all in that same breath of they have not had that divine fight. You know, Ward, really, honestly, you could still argue that he got a guy, you know, Green, from Green to Kessler. These two guys were really out of the boxing game for some time. You know, where Ward, you still have to question, does he have the goods? Same thing with Carl Froch getting a much smaller man, you know, and going to, you know, life and death with Jermaine Taylor and getting a smaller man like Arthur Abraham. I think in a lot of ways, the only one that's in this tournament where we know that he's really has solidified himself as being a true, true warrior and a true threat would be Glenn Johnson. Don't you think, here, Gabe? Are you there?
Do you hear me?
Yeah, now I hear you. Go ahead. I think Dave
okay,
Dave Chen had muted you by accident. Go ahead.
I've actually, yeah, well, I'll pull Mo Harris back in the line here in just a second. With Andre Ward, I think he has had that defining fight. I don't think he's reached the pinnacle. I think Froch will be, if he gets past him, and I fully expect him to beat Arthur Abraham. Each fight is kind of, he's defining himself. But let's not forget that that Mikel Kessler and Arthur Abraham were the guys to beat in this tournament. They were considered the favorites coming in, and there's a lot of revisionist history with boxing fans kind of going, oh, well, Kessler was kind of, you know, at the end of it, and you know, we had more wear and tear on him, and this and that. Coming into this, no one was picking Andre Ward to win this tournament except for myself and maybe one or two other people, you know, whose names I can't even think of. And now that he's had those wins, we're looking at him in a completely different light, and, as well as Kessler. And to me, the only way you can figure out who's good, who's great, who's not, is to fight. And Bute has kept himself out of that mix. So to me, you know, it's the Super Six guys have defined themselves by winning or losing, whereas Bute has defined himself by not even wanting to compete with those guys. And until he does, we won't really know how good he is.
Absolutely, you know, and
I'm going to grab Mo.
Go ahead.
I'll be right back.
The good thing about it is that this 168, there's really no promotional group that's going to be in the way. You definitely could say that they're all going to somehow, some way, and someday, they're all going to get in the ring, and they're eventually going to mix it up where it counts, in the ring. Not in court, not on paper, not on the websites, and not on anything else, except for that good old ring, which is we all anticipate of always wanting to sit down, open up a beer, and relax and watch two men just go at it. Let's see if Gabe's got Mo Harris back on the line with us. Are you there, Gabe?
As a matter of fact, I am, actually. And I'd like to introduce a member of the promotional team, Boxing 360, heavyweight contender, ranked number 8 in the IBF, and yet strangely avoided by a lot of the top guys, Mr. Maurice Harris. Welcome to the show, Mo.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, Maurice, how you doing, brother?
I'm all right, man.
Hey, Mo.
Go ahead, Dave.
I want to kind of start off the interview here, Gabe, about because Mo's been in with some of the pretty much everybody that mattered back in the heavyweight time when it was raining, you know, deep. He was pretty much in with everybody as either a sparring partner or you got in the ring with them. I want to talk a little bit about that, man, and how was that experience? And from then until now, where the heavyweights have really been really really shallow, you know, when it comes to having depth of contenders involved.
Well, basically, you know, like dealing with all the guys that I work with, you know, that was like a learning experience for me, you know what I mean? And, you know, I took my bumps and bruises along the way. But, you know, it helped me out for now because now, you know what I mean, it's like it's kind of hard for me to get fights because a lot of guys out there know that I have so much experience from working with the guys, you know, the likes of Lennox Lewis, Tyson, you know, and the list goes on, you know. But, you know, I just picked up a lot from them, so it's kind of hard right now for guys to fight me.
That's interesting. You know, tell me a little bit about that with Mike Tyson. When you got in with Mike Tyson, how did that go about?
Well, it was back in 2002. He was getting ready to fight Andrew Gallada. And he called me at my house. He personally gave me a call, you know, because I didn't like his trainer at the time, Stacy McKinley. And he asked me to come. I told him no. So then Mike called me himself and asked me to come. I went down to Vegas with him for about a week. He was getting ready for Gallada. And it was a real good experience. Like, I rose to the occasion, you know, and I worked with him for about, like, two other fights, you know, before that. You know, because we actually hooked up in 97, you know what I mean? Like, and he was getting ready for Holyfield the second time. But I never got a chance to box with him. I was just down there for 10 weeks, and they never used me. I don't know if it was because of my style, the style that I had, you know. They just never used me. So then, you know, years had passed, and he called me back again in 02. He was getting ready for Gallada. And I work with one of the most powerful punches that I've ever faced. He's never hurt me. He never hurt me to the head, but to the body, he got me.
Were you able to see him? I mean, when you had a chance to get in the ring, and he's just saying, "Right, I hurt you to the body, never hurt you to the head." But did you see a declining Mike Tyson? Did you see the same fire, desire in him? You know, were you able to catch wind of that?
No, it was just that, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't necessarily say that. I just looked at it as, I didn't look at him as, you know, like him declining or anything like that. I just looked at it like, look, this is Mike Tyson you're working with. You know what I mean? And I just got in there to work. He came to see, he brought it to me the same way he would bring it to anybody else. You know what I mean? So I couldn't say that he was declining because I never looked at him as declining. Now, whatever he had going on with him personally, I couldn't tell. Not when we was working because he came to work every day. He showed up for work every day. We worked. We got our work in, and we went on home. You know, so he never showed me no signs of declining. Not in the gym, anyway.
Now, this past Saturday, you saw one of the Klitschko brothers get in with the Cuban fighter, Orlando Solis. Now, you've been in with both the Klitschkos, right?
Yeah, I've been in with both of them. I didn't get to see the fight. Gabe told me what happened or whatever, but I didn't see the fight. But I just heard about it, And I've been in with both of them. I boxed with the younger one first when he was getting ready to fight DeVarro Williamson back in 05. I think it was 05. Yeah, it was 05. And then I boxed with Vitaly when he was getting ready for Danny Green. And that was I think that was the same year, if I'm not mistaken. And they both were different. You got one, that's stronger, younger, stronger, and the other one is more methodical, just tall and long. Both of them was good. It was a good experience working with both of them. But, I pretty much know how they fight. Because it don't take long for me to pick up on somebody.
So when you see guys – go ahead, Gabe. Sorry.
Who hits harder? I think Vladimir hits harder. Neither one of them never hurt me or rocked me or never knocked me down or anything like that. And I've been hit by both of them. But I think Vladimir is stronger to me. Both of them are strong. I'm not taking away not from Vitaly, but I just think Vladimir is a little bit more accurate with his shot, especially with that right hand. But I don't really see him having too many other things besides his right hand. He's not, if you ever look at a fight, you notice that he's never ever fought on the inside. He's not an inside fighter. He's an outside. Every time you get close to him, what he does, he grabs you. That's what he does. But he's not an inside fighter. His whole strength is just jabbing from the outside and try to drop that big hand on you. You got a decent left hook if he can land it, but Vitaly is just throw everything at you. He'll try to hit you with an uppercut, right hand. It comes from every angle, but he tries at least. He's not safety first. He will try. And he showed that with Lennox.
You sparred with Lennox for 3 years, something like that, right? You were his lead
sparring partner.
Yeah. Part of he seemed to really evolve over his career from before Manny Stewart to when he had his first loss. And then beyond, and become, in my opinion, a much better fighter as he went along. Period were you with him, and did you see the same thing I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course he got Manny changed his whole world around when it came to boxing. He taught him balance because Lennox had a real bad balance. Manny got his feet under him. He was able to get better leverage on his punches. He can always hit, but he was always a big, strong guy. You saw that coming out the Olympics. How he was, how strong and big and strong he was. And he's always had athleticism. But, like once he got, later in his career, the latter part of his career, he had gotten better, after he fought McCall the first time. That's when Manny came in for the rematch and changed his whole style around. And then, he became a much better fighter. His balance, his speed, his coordination became a lot better, So he went out the way he was supposed to.
Well, let's just focus in on you. I don't know how many people know your story. They may have remembered some of your big marquee fight on HBO, but talk to us about your beginnings in the sport. You have one of the more fascinating stories to me, turning pro at such a young age. Kind of just introduce yourself to this audience that may not know exactly your whole story.
Well, it started in 91. I was about 15 years old back in 91. And decided I wanted to fight. I had saw the, I think it was like 91, I think 90 I had just left, and I wanted to fight. I used to get in a lot of street fights. So I was like, let me just take this. One of the guys seen me fight one time. He said, man, you fight so much. So why don't you just take it to the gym, man, and learn the skill and go make some money off it. But see, I didn't know, the ins and outs of boxing or whatever. I just thought that, you can go in the ring, box, and that was that, because I used to suffer in the beginning with, like, my conditioning and stuff. And then, it kind of hurt me, made me turn pro earlier because I used to go to a lot of amateur tournaments, and I couldn't get fights because, I used to be a walkover a lot, guys wasn't in my weight class. And then I had, like, this curse on me as to where, though, I picked up a pro style kind of early because I used to box with so many professionals. And, it was a lot of old sellers around the gym, back at home in Newark, New Jersey, a lot of old sellers that was around. I picked up, a lot from them, and they kind of, like, rubbed off on me. So it was like I got tired of being stood up at amateur tournaments, and I just decided to go pro. And then when I turned pro, I didn't realize what it takes to be a professional. All I knew was just boxing because I was young, and, I had talent, but I didn't have the know-how, like now. And, I was just thrown there early. I had a lot of early fights, took some losses, won some, won, it was like up and down. It was like a seesaw battle. then finally, you know, I just, you know, came 1996. You know, I sort of like put it together a little something. Like I was always showed flashes of greatness, but I just never was able to put it all together. So then 96 came, I fought David Izon down on the night of the Young Heavyweights. Tonight, Shannon Briggs got stopped by Daryl Wilson, I'm sorry. And that's when I came out. You know, a lot of people started recognizing me. Then I would come back, win a fight, lose one, win a fight. So it was like up and down. Then finally, you know, I just started grasping all the teachings. I started putting it all together because, you know, they say with age comes wisdom.
Right.
So I started learning as I went on. You know, I started learning. I started getting better and better, you know, by working with them guys that I was working with, like all the sparring. And everything just started coming together. And then 06, I had a bad showing with Ty Fields. You know, I had a bad showing with Ty Fields. You know, I just looked so terrible. And I started to hang it up. You know, then, you know, I was like, nah, I put too much time and too much energy and too much effort into this to give up now. So, you know, one thing led to another. I just was able to went back in the gym, you know, went back in the gym in 07, actually. I trained the whole year. I couldn't get nobody to give me no fights. Then I finally met, you know, Boxing 360 with then Dr. Mario Yagogi. Changed my whole life around. You know what I mean? Just, you know, went undefeated last year. And here I am. Now I'm number 8.
Well,
and I just developed a new style, new hungerness.
What was the difference? I mean, what happened with Ty Fields with that fight there? What do you think what was going on in that period of your life there from now?
Just a lot of things. Like, I just wasn't happy with my management. You know, I just wasn't focused. I had too many outside distractions. You know, I wasn't stable as a human being. You know what I mean? I had a lot of personal demons and issues that I was dealing with, you know, that kind of like, you know, sidetracked me and, you know, and kind of like derailed me. So, you know, I just, you know, I came to grips. Like, you know, I just looked myself in the mirror one day and said, look, man, you know what I mean? Like, you love fighting. If this is what you want to do, you got to go at it wholeheartedly. You know what I mean? Like, you got everything it takes. You just got to go ahead and prove yourself and show that you belong here. You know, you want to come, you want to put all this time into fighting and then, you know, just come this far to give up? Like, nah. So what I did was I just went back to the drawing board and I just changed my whole living, you know, the way I live, like my lifestyle. I changed it, you know, and I just became like a nun. You know what I mean? Like, I just stopped doing so many things I used to do, you know, and I just changed it. So now it's like, you can't get me out the gym. You can't get me off the road. I don't even feel right if I don't run every day. You know, so now it's like I'm fighter, you know what I mean? I'm like, I kid you not, it's on my kids. You know what I mean? It's like I'm a throwback fighter now. Like, I just stay in shape all the time. You know
right.
what I mean? I eat right. You know, I just eat, sleep, and drink boxing. So, you know, this was people been trying to get this out of me for years, but I just said, you know, it wasn't meant at that time. It wasn't time yet. You know what I mean? That's how I look at it. I said, nothing don't happen before it's time. And whenever God ready for me to go where I need to go, then that's where I'll go. But meanwhile, I'm going to just be prepared. But whatever, I always stay ready. So if they call for me to fight tomorrow, I'll be ready to take a fight. That's how I am with it now.
Now, you guys just won a purse bid with Sam Peter. It was in early March. And you guys, it was part of that IBF box-off tournament. And then Sam decided he's not going to fight you. He's going to fight somebody else, Robert Hellenius.
Yeah.
And then I know you guys are trying to make fights with Areola. They weren't interested. I think Adamic was also another one of those names. It was like, not this week. You know, what's the latest word? You know, where do you go and what do you do in the meantime?
All I do right now is what I'm saying. Like, I got a good supporting team with Mario. You know what I mean? Mario Yagobi. I got a real, real supporting, you know, I got a supporting cast with him, just him by himself. You know what I mean? And, you know, like, my ranking speaks for itself. Like, you know, they're knocking them guys out the rankings because they don't want to take the fight. You know what I mean? They don't want to fight me. So I'm not too worried about as to what's going on, like, as far as the business side of it. You know what my job is? I'm happy because 2 years ago I didn't have a pot to piss in, like I said in my interview with Gabe. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't, you know, a window to throw it out of. So I'm kind of happy in the sense that, you know that I'm ranked number 8 now, and I know they're going to move me up when the next rankings come out next month. I'm going to be up a little higher probably, you know, because these guys don't want to fight. So, you know what I mean? With that said, I don't want to, you know, I'm not sitting around complaining about it, you know, because it's going to happen. One day it's going to happen. You know, the only thing I do in the meantime is just stay ready. That's all. I get up and run every day like I was training for the World Championship. You know what I mean? Like, I am so happy to be in this position, and I know it's going to get better, you know what I mean, because that's motivation within itself. you know, just seeing these guys and the way they're turning me down. So that just makes me want to work harder and stay even more on top of my game. So when I do come in to fight or whatever, they'll see what they'll see what it is, and you'll see why they've been ducking me.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm curious, can we jump back a little bit to the history? And that part of you always fascinates me, because we were talking in the interview, and I said, you've been in with everybody. I mean, if you can name a name in the last 20 years of heavyweight boxing, you fought that guy in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the toughest guy?
Guy? Oh, man, I can't. You know what? I can't really categorize that, because it's just like, you know, different styles, you know what I mean? Like, you know, they say styles make fights, you know what I'm saying? And I was in the gym with these guys, man. He's like, you know, and it's like, I don't know if it's because of the style that I had, you know, with, like, you know, dealing with these guys. But I say, like, I got so many. It's like so many tough guys that I work with. Like, Alpha Cole, he was real tough, like, when I was coming up. But he would just press you and press you and press you. Then I could say, like, you know, Tyson was tough, you know what I mean? Like, you know, dealing with Lennox, it was a lot, man. It was a lot of guys I worked with. Stampede, all them guys and stuff. You know, I don't take nothing away from none of them guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been in the ring with a lot of tough guys. And, you know, it's like I can't just say one was tougher than the other, because they all tough. Because any time you get in the ring with a guy that's over 200 pounds I can hit, they all tough to beat.
You know, what I find interesting is that you started off really pretty young, right, Mo? I mean, you were, what, 15, 16 years old when you decided to get in the ring as a cruiserweight?
Yeah, I started off as a light heavyweight. You know, when I was an amateur, I was fighting 165 pounds, and then I moved up. When I turned pro, I was fighting light heavyweight, but I was a grown boy. And then I couldn't make light heavyweight no more. I had to kill myself to make the weight. Then I moved up to cruiserweight, but I was a small cruiserweight, like 185, 184, you know, that would be the contract, you know, give or take a pound, you know. And, you know, I had maybe two or three fights as a cruiserweight. I didn't have that many fights as a cruiserweight. And then, you know, I moved up to heavyweight, because, you know, if you look back at my career, you look at my record early on, when I first turned heavyweight around like 90, I think it was around like 95, 96. Might have been a little earlier than that. But, you know, I was like 200 pounds, 205. You know, I used to put sand in my pocket, you know, just to make the weight. You know, but I was at the speed. I was
wow.
Like, you know, yeah. So, you know, I was a small heavyweight. You know, I just didn't have no. I couldn't lose them pounds no more. I was a growing young man.
Right.
So, you know, then once, you know, I turned 25. That's when my man strength came, and I started, you know, I started coming around 225, stuff like that. So, you know.
So I mean, you were pretty much a young guy fighting older guys that were, you know, that really honestly were familiar with their bodies already, right? Because they were older. They kind of understood what they're able to do, their capabilities.
Yeah.
And you were just learning on the job then, right?
Yeah, yep. And that's why, and guess what? And you know what? For me going through everything that I went through, it all paid off. Just look at me now. And I'm just starting. Believe it or not, and then you got to check this out too. See, I ain't never really been. I've been stopped a few times. You know what I'm saying? But you know, like I ain't never really been like beat up. You know, like really, really beat up, because I've had so many periods of rest in between. You know what I mean? Like fights. Like I had a lot of gaps in my career. You know what I mean? So I've never really been beaten up and just, you know, like worn down and just not able to just move, and my motor skills is messed up and I can't function and my reflexes is bad. I still feel like I'm 20 years old. You know, and I'm 35, you know,
wow.
Because the way I live, you know what I'm saying? I live good, you know what I mean? I live clean, I live good, and, you know, in shows. Whenever I go to the gym and work out, you know, it's like when I go in the gym, like I don't have to go in the gym for a month, but I'm constantly on the road running. And when I go back in the gym and work out, it's like I never left. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a part of me, it's like second nature. You know, you've been doing something for over 20, I've been doing this for like 20 years now, a little over 20 years. So it's like I feel like I deserve to be where I'm at, and I'm going to go further, you know?
Right, right.
Well, man,
so
you know
what?
It's
a good thing, man. It's a blessing from God.
I want to continue wishing you like success, and I hope you get back into the ring. I hope something's worked out so we get to see you back in there so we can witness the crap, you know?
You're going to see it. Oh, trust me, you're going to see it. You know why you're going to see it? You're going to see it. You know, you're going to see it. I guarantee you're going to see it. You don't see it, you'll hear about it.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because, you know, it's like this is what I live for.
Right.
You know what I mean? This is what I live for. Like, this, I mean, boxing is just like, see, for me, I don't just box for just money. You know what I mean? I box because I love to box. Like, that's just what I do. You know what I'm saying? I do it because I love it. It's like, it's second nature. Like, for me, fighting is a way of life. That's how I look at it now. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like when I turned 31, 32, that's when I, like, turned the corner and my mind just matured, like, as far as what I wanted to do. So it's like a way of life for me. You know what I mean? It's just like, that's just a part of me. And that's why it comes so easy to me. A lot of people think it's easy, but it's not. It's just that I've just been blessed with the talent to be able to do it. You know, and
absolutely,
still be around to be able to survive after everything that I've been through. It's a blessing.
Well, there you go, Maurice
so much,
Harris,
Mo.
Man.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mo, coming on and sharing your story with us. And
yeah,
we'll
thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it, man. Anytime. You know, you can just call. I'm on your phone call away, man.
I know you just finished some sparring like a few minutes ago, and then you hop on the radio with us. So I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, I told you, man. Like, if I give you my word, man, that's one thing about me, man. I'm a man of my word. You know, if I tell you, you know, I'm gonna do something, I'm gonna do it.
There you go.
That's just how I live.
We,
I appreciate that, man. I thank y'all for having me on, man. Anytime, just give me a call. I'm here.
All right,
take
man.
Care,
we'll talk
brother.
Soon. Take care.
All right, man. Thank y'all. God bless y'all, man.
Back at you.
All right, man.
There you go. Heavyweight contender Maurice Harris. You know, some folks are probably going like, okay, well, I've never seen him. I don't know who he is. You got to kind of go back. You got to kind of take it back earlier in the millennium where Maurice was kind of more a little bit more televised. But, you know, he's been back on a great winning streak since he's been signed to the Boxing 360. 360 doing a great job rebuilding back Mo Harris. And, you know, You look, I mean, that's the whole reason why we wanted him on today, was to kind of really kind of give a little bit more of an insight of who is Harris. I mean, this guy started at such an early age, light heavyweight, a cruiserweight, and then we're talking about a grown baby getting in with grown men that are heavyweights, guys that are now, that are familiar. They're 28 years old. They're familiar with their bodies. And you got a young guy getting in there with big dudes and mixing it up, you know, and he's got some rough times in his boxing career. But you can see he's on a very positive note, and he's on a very positive note back on his career. So thank you again, Mo Harrison, Boxing 360, for allowing us to interview him. Hey, Gabe, let's pass in some fight fans. We want to talk boxing. That's some fights that are coming up this weekend on Friday and Saturday night. Over here in Fairfield, California, Solo Boxeo is back in the mix. You're going to have Antonio Escalante getting in with Alejandro Perez. That should be a pretty good mix, man. I mean, that should be a fan-friendly fight right there. But like I said, let's get some fight fans in. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
All right, let's get in. Chris, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. Brother, what's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing? I'm just calling in for the fight that's coming on this weekend on HBO. Happens to have one of my favorite fighters, Yoriorkis Gamboa, and he's fighting Jorge Solis. Not too many people know too much about Jorge Solis, but I think it's going to be a pretty tough fight for Gamboa. And on the undercard, there's a guy from Connecticut. His name is Matt Remillard. He's from Manchester, Connecticut, and he's a pretty good prospect. I seen him a long time ago when he was an amateur, and I think he's facing Mickey Garcia this weekend, and it should be a pretty good fight. I think both fights are definitely good fights, and people should definitely tune in on HBO this weekend.
I think that fight there between Mikey and Matt is probably going to be the stiller there. I mean, those guys being compared in competition-wise, I think they're very competitive. I think it could honestly sway to either man. It depends on their game plan and their discipline. Gabe, what do you think, brother? I mean, I'm kind of hyped up about that fight. More or less hyped up of seeing these two guys get in the ring than I am with Gamboa and Jorge Solis.
Yeah, I think I'll touch on both fights. Solis, you know, is a guy. He was knocked out by Manny Pacquiao, I think back in 2007. And I think it took about 7 or 8 rounds for Manny to get him out of there. He's pretty slow. His punches are wide. He's got good power, so he's got a puncher's chance. But he's only gotten slower. I spent a lot of time watching tape of him this past week, kind of watching that progression from when he was a really top contender to who he is now. And I think, you know, the top ranked match made this fight for a reason, just as they did with Pacquiao for a reason. The things that he brings to the table, while he has experience and some height on Solis, everybody's going to have height on Solis, who's a short guy, I think will not be negated by will be negated by the fact that you know, Solis is, or Gamboa rather, is a very fast puncher. He's becoming more compact in his shots. I think the only problem is he's been very inactive, and he's a guy that is still maturing as a fighter, and they're getting him to tighten up his shots, to be more compact in his combinations, to tuck his chin a little bit more, or a lot more in some cases, especially when he opens up. It's hard to make that progression when you get to HBO and they only have you fight like once or twice every, you know, 6 months. But I think it'll be a fun, interesting fight. But you're right, the Mikey Garcia versus Matt Remillard, I think, is a hell of a fight. Two undefeated guys. They've both been very active. But if you look at how they've built Mikey Garcia as opposed to Matt Remillard, who was built by TKO Promotions until last year when they released him, as they pared down their roster, you see a lot of Virginia, you see a lot of Midwest guys on his resume, as opposed to Mikey Garcia, who you watched over last year, him take on Cornelius Locke and blow him out. Oliver Lonsky was another guy that was kind of there to get some rounds, and you saw Garcia just take him apart. There's more quality in terms of who they've built Garcia against,
right,
and more of a plan in terms of how they've built him. And I think that will come into play. You know, it's a fight where Remillard, and I've seen him, you know, he's kind of an all-around kind of guy, but he doesn't do any one thing special. He's just a solid fighter. Whereas Garcia's got excellent power, and I think his special gift is range and finishing. He really knows how to get his range, and when he hurts you, he knows exactly how to keep that range and finish. I think this would be a hell of a fight. It's going to go down to the wire and maybe a late stoppage for Garcia, but I think ultimately it's going to be the depth of how he was built and his experience that wins out for Garcia. But excellent, excellent fight, and winnable for both guys.
You know, the thing with Mikey Garcia, though, is if he sleeps on Matt Remillard, you know, Remillard could take advantage of what – the thing, too, Gabe, what I like about this is Matt has a lot riding on himself going into this fight, you know. I mean, I applaud the guys, you know, Mikey Garcia's team accepting this fight, Matt Remillard going, hey, you know what, let me get on to this fight. Because he's got to bring something a little extra getting in with Mikey Garcia. Mikey Garcia is being built up as a potential superstar. Matt has the opportunity of stopping that and him taking over the limelight that's been kind of shined on Mikey Garcia, you know. In terms of Mikey Garcia hurting Matt, it's a very big possibility, but there's a very big possibility that Matt hurts him on the way of the process of Mikey Garcia hurting him to get a stoppage. That's what I like about this fight a whole lot. You know, I think there's so many turns and so many corners that are blindsides we're not going to see when these two guys do meet in the ring. Jorge Solis is just another guy to keep Gamboa with the winning streak and to keep him patented up so that he can look down the line for some bigger fights for him. You know, hopefully down in the summertime he gets in with Juanma Lopez or maybe somebody else along the lines. Maybe Jason Litzau. Somebody other than, I mean, I know there's talks of a rematch. I mean, I'm sorry, we're talking about somebody else. I know there's talks of there's never going to be a Juanma Lopez because it's been so many times they've talked about it. But I think that's the way they want to maneuver him. It's just keep him winning, and then possibly, like I said, late down the summer or early next year, he gets a bigger name and a bigger threat.
This is a good – it's a good experience fight for him. You know, he's going to have to learn how to get to the guy without getting hit. You know, and not walking into something, because, you know, Solis can punch. He's very slow, but he can punch. And you know, personally, I see, you know, Gamboa going over the top of that lazy jab with his right hand and coming back with an uppercut, you know, and finishing it off. I think that's going to be the finishing sequence, or at least the sequence that gets it going, gets him hurt.
I can only see Gamboa getting hurt if he just kind of doesn't even respect Solis because of like you said, he's slow. You know what I mean? Where he just kind of just undermines the power that Solis does bring in, which he's done in the past. You know what I mean? He's been dropped by lesser foes. But if Gamboa was to get caught by Solis, it would be just on the basis of him not respecting the guy that's across from him in the ring. That's the only way I could really see Solis being successful, because I could just see Solis being very puzzled and kind of, you know, stunned just on the speed and the awkwardness that, that Gamboa is going to bring into the ring. You know, I think that's the same thing where you could say when he faced Manny Pacquiao. You know, he was a little stunned on the speed, the awkwardness, and he's gonna be back in the same situation and the same type of position, but just on a different night, you know, when he was in with Manny Pacquiao. That's what I see.
Yeah, I mean, that fight was a long time ago, too. And I just think, yeah, you're right. You know, if he walks into something, if he gets – it's good. The onus is on him to just kind of show the new things that he's been working on, which is tucking his chin. He has a real tendency to square up, particularly when he's finishing or when he's opening up. He'll, you know, you'll see both legs kind of just get parallel to each other, and then he's nice and squared up to get countered and dropped. I think a lot of times that's why he gets dropped, is his balance is so crappy. It's not crappy throughout the whole fight, but he has balance lapses, if you will, and also that chin just gets higher and higher the more punches he throws, you know. So he's got a lot of flaws, and if you really look at the way, because they didn't start off developing him, you know, they signed him kind of midstream, Gamboa, as opposed to Juanma Lopez, who they built from the ground up.
Right.
And so, you know, they've had time to kind of say, he needs to work on this. Let's give him this kind of opponent. They haven't had that same time with Gamboa. So I think right now there's a period where Top Rank's kind of refining him. And I know everybody wants that fight right now, but let's be honest. You know, there's only one draw in that fight, and that's Juanma Lopez. You
right.
Know, Gamboa is not a draw. You know, Steve did a great article this week talking about the promotional end of the Cubans. He called it the Cuban conundrum and how they don't really translate over here. You know, they do well in their own country, but then, you know, they're amateurs and people know who they are. But when they come to America, a lot of times they're already, you know, 27, 28, and on top of that, their style isn't exactly fan-friendly. And that's why I kind of did like almost a de facto kind of second part today with Ronnie Shields, who trains Aris Larry Landa and Guillermo Rigondeaux. And his problem is basically teaching them how to be entertaining American-style fighters while still kind of operating in the framework of being a Cuban. And if you look at, you know, Gamboa, who is actually kind of naturally exciting fighter, but there's still a lot of flaws.
And he wants
there.
To be an exciting fighter. That's the other thing. He wants to be an exciting. See, this is an interesting point here for Solis. There's something there that he can't take advantage of, and you're absolutely right. Where, you know, Top Rank getting a hold of Gamboa kind of in the later stage and really trying to find his pace and kind of calm him down too in that ring is Solis really should look at it. If his corner is really looking at any tapes at Gamboa, is really watch that balance that he's struggling with, like you were talking about, Gabe, really kind of happens when he decides to get overexcited and overcommits and wants to throw flurries. So Lisa's game plan should not pressure, not come forward, but really start walking backwards. Allow Gamboa to set first, you know, where he can catch him when he's coming in rather than trying to catch him when he's darting out. You know, Solis to me would have to be the more tame, more relaxed, and kind of bring him down to make him become comfortable, which is you're playing with fire when you allow Gamboa to be comfortable, but really allow Gamboa to become comfortable that he doesn't see the shots coming at him because he's so busy coming forward and darting in. But I just don't see that with Solis, being that he's so slow and being that I think that he's going to have problems automatically with a guy that does want to be explosive, a guy that does want to make a mark here in the States, and he's hungry to have the same type of fan base that Juanma Lopez has. I just see Solis maybe trying to go, you know what, I'm just going to give it all my all for 2, 3, 4 rounds and hopefully last 5 rounds, but I just don't see that happening at all. Chris, I know you still got you on the line, brother. What are your picks, brother?
Well, in the main event, I'm definitely picking Gamboa by stoppage, possibly around the 8th or 9th round, and I'm going to go with Matt Remillard on the undercard. Not just because he's from Connecticut, I've seen both of the fighters, and I like Matt's work rate. You know, he goes to the body well, he also goes up top pretty well, and Garcia's pretty good too. I just like Matt's work rate and everything that he brings to the table, but they're both great fighters.
Gee, that's what I like about this fight. You know what I mean? I think that it could go either way. I think it all depends on whose game plan is forced into the fight in the beginning and takes over the pace and ring generalship. I think that's the whole the whole point of this fight here is who takes control in the beginning and who makes the adjustments to stay in control. Because at any point, I think in any round, somebody can take over immediately if they stay focused and listen to their corners. This is what makes a good great boxing match. This is why we really tune in to watch boxing, is to see two guys, you know, at the top of their stage of their career and them going in and putting it on the line, man. It's a great, great fight. Chris, hey, thank you, brother, for calling in. We're going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right, thank you very much.
Again, you know, I love the fight. I love these two matches. I mean, Gamboa, Solis, you know, always has that puncher chance, man, but it's just one of those things you sit back and you think, would Top Rank right now at this moment, knowing how Top Rank kind of builds their fighters and maneuvers their fighters, even though Gamboa is being co-promoted by another promotional group and stuff, but you look at the money that there's kind of being filtered in these fighters and stuff, and you look at it and say, okay, who do you want to see them be pushed in? I just don't see the matchmaking and how Top Rank handles their fighters want to throw them in there. They're throwing them in with somebody that has a valid way of gaining that win, but they have to dig deep, and so deep that they may fall into that hole if they dig in a little too deep. You know what I mean, Gabe?
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, and it's going to be these fights, to me, what I'm excited about. Well, you know, the Gamboa fight, I'm not as excited about just because I already kind of know how it's going to turn out. But this other fight, Remillard and Garcia, you know, That caller right there just kind of hit it right on the head in terms of this is what Boxing After Dark to me is all about.
Right.
Is two guys, you don't know what's going to happen. One guy's going to win and move forward. One guy's going to lose and go back to the drawing board. And it's going to be that kind of war where who wants it more, who's more experienced. This is the thing that I'm also why I'm picking against Remillard is – you know, when you're trying to pick a guy, you know, you factor in everything. And I'm going to go with the guy that's been a headliner or at least been featured on TV a number of times versus the guy that's on HBO for the first time and really kind of featured for the very first time in that kind of setting. I think Matt has headlined before, but not on this level. And whereas Garcia has been groomed for a moment like this, he's ready for this moment. He's been taught with this moment what to expect in it. I'm not sure if Remillard has been there yet. And so, you know, while I think he's a solid fighter, I'm actually very excited for him to have this fight. I was really excited the Top Rank got him. I just kind of wonder why they would make this match. If they were building him to be a star, or were they building him for this moment where they could feed him to the guy that they're hoping is a star?
Right.
So that's,
I think that's,
you know,
that's
what
kind
of
I think the second one you're
is.
Saying. Yeah, I think the second one, what you mentioned, is what is really what it comes down to is that Mikey Garcia, Matt is the perfect opponent in terms of digging deep into Mikey Garcia to see what he's made of, especially with Mikey Garcia's story. You know, he guy comes from a boxing family. He's grown up around fighters. You know, Fernando Vargas, his brother, his father has trained, you know, fighters after fighters. This is a guy that's been surrounded by boxing. You know, when you hear somebody say, well, I eat, sleep, and shit boxing, you kind of sit there and you tend to go, this guy really does eat, sleep, and shit boxing because he grew up on it. You know, it's almost that way. It's almost that kind of scenario that you were, you know, this guy was born into the mafia. Mikey Garcia was born into boxing, you know? And you knew already he was kind of groomed up to be a star. But with Matt from Connecticut, this guy could be a showstopper. This guy can stop. He could actually make the curtains come back down for Mikey Garcia. And I think that's what Top Rank is kind of doing. You know, Golden Boy has done that a little premature, you know, where they've thrown in their young lions and they've thrown the bone and say, okay, we got two guys here that potentially could be stars. Let's throw the bone out there. Let's see who wins, and then we know who to invest in. It's the coin toss. Top Rank is doing that. You know, they get it. Look, we got two guys that could potentially be stars, but we have a tug of war. Who should we invest in more money in at this moment? The guy we've had from the beginning, Mikey Garcia, we put in tons of money in already, or the new kid? You know what? Let them duke it out. the old school way, and then we make our final decision off of that way, which is left down to two men enter, one man leaves. I love this whole – I love when they do this, when a promoter gets ballsy enough to say, let's put in two of our best and see what happens. Not only does it give us good TV, not does it only give us good boxing, but it gives us a reason to stay home on a Saturday night to sit back and go, this is why we watch boxing. This is the whole reason why we sit down and watch boxing.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely isn't, watching guys in fights that I know the outcome to. You know, and even, you know, with the Solis fight and Gamboa, it's a developmental fight, and it's a kind of fight that if he can't, he has to look good winning it. He has to kind of learn something in this fight, you know, and he's a vulnerable guy. It's kind of what makes Gamboa appealing to me, almost in a sense, and I'm not really comparing them, but the way Trinidad always made me want to watch is because, you know, one punch, he's like one punch away from losing and one punch away from winning at all times. And that, to me, that's what makes somebody kind of exciting. I don't really, you know, as much as I like enjoy watching a Mayweather dissect somebody using technical skills, and boy, you can't hit him, and I spend more time watching his fights trying to figure out how to beat him than really worrying about the opponent he's facing. That's not that compelling to me every time, you know. I'd rather see two guys, not rock 'em, sock 'em, robot, but two guys trying to stop each other. That's more exciting to me. And you know, Gamboa Solis promises that, and certainly Garcia versus Remillard promises that. Because, you know, you got Garcia, who is groomed for this moment and probably the A-side here. But Remillard could become an A-side, and he knows that. All he has to do is beat Mikey Garcia. So, yeah, compelling fights, great night at the fights. I wish I was going.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I was going to that one as well and stuff. But this Friday night on Solo Boxeo, we got a really good, intriguing matchup. You know, Antonio Escalante trying to get himself back on track since losing his fight with Ponce de Leon. That was supposed to be his coming out party. You know, he was really confident and believed that he was at the right time in his career to face at Daniel Ponce de Leon, and boy, did he come out on the short end of that fight. Ooh. There, getting KO'd, and yeah. one of 2010's best KOs of the year. Now he's back in the ring with Alejandro Perez. You know what? Before I even speak on this fight here, because I my computer's running slow, I want to make sure, is this the Alejandro Perez, the kid from Salinas that he's fighting, Alacran?
Yeah, this is the kid that lost to Rico Ramos back in,
now,
I believe it was late 2009.
Now, that's a good friend of mine, and I haven't had a chance to give him a call, man. We've been so busy because we're taking off next week. Fight fans, I'm going to be in L.A. We have a new project that me and Gabriel and Ed Magic TV that we're going to be working on, and soon we'll let you guys in on it. I think everybody's going to be very appreciative of what we're going to be doing and trying to put out there for the fight fans. It's something new, fresh, and something that we believe that's really needed. But I'm really excited for Alejandro Perez, man. I've watched this kid from the beginning. Before he even got the Rico Ramos, I've had him on Leaving the Ring. He was one of the first guests on Leaving the Ring. I've met him personally. I've watched him spar at the Wild Card. He was in with Dean, the Irish Lightning Burns. This kid's got a great, great left hook to the body, you know, and Antonio Escalante is one of those volume guys, got good power, decent power, but Alejandro takes good, good shots. This is a great, great pressure fight for Antonio Escalante. I mean, if he allows this small guy, Perez, to get in that pocket, and Perez is no, he's had difficulty in his career, meaning that he's had dates set up, Gabriel, and this is a common story in boxing where he's got a date set up for himself to step into the ring, but the week of the fight, the fighter fell out, and now he's like, oh, well, I got to go back into the training camp and keep himself in there. He could be in that bad position where he has overtrained and overtrained. I mean, this guy has had more fights fall out on him, man, that I'm very even surprised that he's stay this motivated and hungry to be back into the ring. You know what I mean? He hasn't been picked up by anybody. Al Heyman one time was looking at him and putting him on their roster, but it didn't seem to form, and it was a bad luck for Alejandro Perez. But this is a fight here where you're going to definitely see punches and bunches, and you're going to see somebody's head continually being snapped back and a guy keep coming forward. This is almost, in a way, it's going to be a poor man's version of Mikey Garcia and Matt Relamard. I think this is going to be a great fight to set off for the weekend fights this Friday on Solo Book Sale. I don't know what your thoughts are about this fight.
The thing with Alejandro Perez, and you hit it right on the head, is that he might be stale. You know, he might be a guy that's overtrained, because he's always, I remember when I was training at Wildcard, I don't anymore, for all those people listening and taking down notes of things to hate on me about. But I was about a year and a half there, and I used to train like early in the morning till about 10, and Alejandro would be coming in every day, 10 o'clock sharp. And the guy is a workhorse, and he never missed a day. I think he had an injury at one point that kind of sidelined him. But he was just very consistent. But he was also one of those guys that gives everything in sparring, takes a lot of shots, doesn't have a lot of power. You know, he's got pop, but not that kind of one-stop, you know, power that makes a guy kind of special. He's a grinder. You know, he's a volume guy. And he tends to kind of fall in a little bit, kind of open for the uppercut. We saw with Rico Ramos, you know, speed and angles gives him problems. Now, lucky for him, Escalante is not a power guy, or not a speed guy, but he is a power guy. He is the kind of guy that if he lands, you're in trouble. But he's also there to be hit. I mean, this fight is very, very exciting to me. It's a chance to see Alejandro really get a shot. But you got two guys coming off losses. They're just very different losses. I mean, Alejandro faded in the back end of, under accumulation from Rico Ramos in the back end of that fight. Couldn't deal with the speed, got really kind of beat up, and was on his way to possibly, you know, kind of an accumulation stoppage. Escalante, who was supposed to be, like you said, his coming out party, was his going out party. As soon as he touched, you know, got touched by Ponce de Leon, you could tell. He was like, oh, shit, you know, this is too much power for me to handle. And then, bam, he got knocked the hell out. One of the best knockouts of that year. Can he recover from that? Who knows? Has Alejandro recovered from his, you know, sitting in the gym all this time? Who knows? It's a really intriguing fight. I really can't wait. Guaranteed action.
This is the great part. This is the fight. This is the thing that I like about this fight here, too, is that Alejandro is not a soft-touch puncher. This guy does carry very heavy hands. He's a short-stature, compact puncher who likes to work to the body. But even in sparring and with his match with Rico Ramos, you were able to see he has a difficult time with movers, guys that box, guys that use the whole ring. With Antonio Escalante giving us almost a fight of the year in 2010, you can almost kind of say that he's coming into this match with the mind frame of saying, I need to prove, not just to myself, but to my fans, I'm not damaged good. Now, proving that he's not damaged good with a guy like Alejandro Perez, to me, it's not the smartest thing to do, because you got a guy that could take a good punch but still can be hurt, but a guy that can literally bang back, a guy that has the Mexican mentality is that you hit me, I'm hitting you back. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to go anywhere soon. And the thing, too, is that I know how Alejandro Perez is going to bring a lot of weight into this fight, meaning that not only is he going to bring determination and body shots, and he's going to be there for all the rounds in this fight, but he's bringing a huge fan base. Being out of Salinas, California, and being known in San Jose, California, and all the way down to the little small towns in the Bay Area, he's bringing some fight fans. So he's got some good motivation, and he's going to have some good support there, a support system that he's going to really need in this fight facing Antonio Escalante, where Antonio Escalante really honestly is kind of in the dark in this match by himself, fighting in the Bay with more or less the hometown fighter here.
To me, it's a perfect fight. You know, it's two guys in a crossroads, two guys. This is perfect style matchup. It's winnable. I think it slides into Escalante's favor a little bit because of he's got more power. But at the same time, he's a guy that eats a lot of shots. He's been in some serious wars. And I wonder what the wear and tear is going to be like. He's also been off for a while. Whereas Alejandro's been off for, you know, what, since late 2009. So he's been off for a while. But I have a feeling they're going to shake the rust real fast and get acquainted with each other even faster, you know. It's just going to be – Alejandro's a guy that takes some time to warm up.
Right.
Or warm into his game. It's like he gets hit a few times and he starts to get his offense going. And by the middle of the fight, he's at full, you know, the engine is idling fully revving. Will he get that chance against Escalante? I don't know, but I tend to go with the guy with more power, and I am picking Escalante, but who knows, man? He could be damaged goods.
You know, I'm going to go with Alejandro Perez in this fight. I think that he's going to lose a lot of the early rounds, but what's going to happen is Escalante is going to look for that kill, and when he looks for that kill, that means he's going to have to stay in that pocket a little bit longer, and then body shots are going to take its toll. It's going to be one after another, body shot after a body shot. But eventually, it's going to wear him down with that power that Escalante carries fresh on in the beginning of the rounds. I think it's just going to kind of disappear in the mid rounds. And then you're going to see Alejandro Perez come on late and possibly get a late stoppage. Not a KO stoppage like Ponce de Leon did, but a late stoppage where he stops him with just body shots and the fight's going to be over. This is a really interesting fight. You know, it really depends on who wants it the most in this crossroad fight. These are the kind of fights that I think a lot of us are always hoping to see, and we're getting it on this weekend here, you know, on Solo Book Sale first and then on HBO. So Golden Boy getting it right with this fight on Solo Book Sale, and Top Right getting it right on HBO. Great set of fights for fight fans to be excited. So make sure you fill in your ice chest full of beer. Get the barbecue. I know it's raining, but who cares? If you're a hardcore boxing fan like myself and Gable here, then you're going to be definitely a hardcore barbecue guy. We don't care. I barbecue rain or shine.
Well, I don't, but
I do.
I don't, but I'm not a barbecue guy. You know, I do enjoy meat. I do eat it often, but you know, it's kind of hard to bust out the grill in an apartment. You know, I just
well, that's true.
That's just how I roll. You know.
You know, when
I'll come
I
over to your house, Dave, and we'll do a little barbecue act together.
When I used to live in an apartment, we used to do it in the hallway. I know it was fire hazard and stuff, but we didn't care. We didn't even think at that time. We just say, hey, what the hell with it? Just leave all the doors open, the windows, and the smoke would just travel out. But
a little hibachi in the hallway. Nice.
Yeah. So we found one way or another. We opened up a hole in the ceiling and let the smoke go up in the ceiling and the roof because they had the roof vents and stuff for it to seep out. But, what I'm hearing right now is finally, David Haye and Vladimir Klitschko have signed on that dotted line. So this fight's supposed to be happening. I think a lot of us are excited. I know I am. It's been overdue. It's two heavyweights that we've been wanting to see since, I don't know, what's been 2 years in the talks of seeing these two heavyweights finally mix it up, and now it seems like it's going to happen. Hopefully there's no injuries between neither one of the camps so that we do see these two guys finally get in the ring and determine who is the best heavyweight. You know, David Haye with the chopped head and the T-shirt, carrying the Klitschko brothers' heads on, you know, I loved. I wish I could have got that T-shirt first off, man. I would have been sporting that for a very long time because it's such a great T-shirt. And then you're having Vladimir Klitschko finally rise up to the occasion and calling David Haye a biatch, you know, and the American slang, you know, David Haye, stop being a biatch and step to the plate. And he said, well, okay, well, you know what, we're going to make it happen. So, you know, it's one of those heavyweight fights, man, that I think, you know, a lot of American fans that are not aware of these heavyweights that are from the UK across the pond, they're going to miss out. Because if these were two American fighters, this would probably be kind of labeled as the fight of the century, or this is the fight that the century has been missing out on. You know what I mean, Gabe?
Yeah, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. Quite honestly, You know, Manny Stewart seems to think it'll happen, and a lot of the guys I'm talking to out of England seem to think it's going to happen. So it's just one of those things, you know, where they keep teasing us with something great, and then we don't get it. But I'm really excited about this fight. I personally, you know, and I talked to somebody that was kind of close to the situation, so, you know, why not fight Vitaly? That seems to be, one, the more winnable fight. And then, two, if you win that fight, then you're going to double your money, and the Vladimir Klitschko fight becomes even bigger. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And granted, their history, the Klitschko brothers, has been, you know, Vladimir loses, and then Vitaly goes and gets that revenge. You know, at least that happened with the Corey Sanders fight. I think there was one other fight as well. But to me, it just seems like the easier guy. It didn't used to be this way, but Vitaly seemed to be the guy that now seems to be ready to be taken. Before, he seemed to be the tougher style. But the legs look stiffer to me. He was getting hit a little bit more against Solis. And I know, you know, Hay doesn't fight that way, but he is more of a speed fighter. It just seems to me that Vladimir is the guy that's priming and seems to be more dangerous to deal with. But I'm excited about this fight. This is, you know, their American counterparts in the you know, Manny and Floyd can't get it together to make the fight that they want. And we'll get to the rumors about Floyd's sparring session on pay-per-view later. But they can't get it together. And it is nice to see that if this does happen, that at least the heavyweights, you know, Hay and Klitschko are getting it together. And this is the fight that we all want. And it's nice to see the fans get what they want, you know, and the writers too. I'm excited about it. You know, I just hope I'm not getting too excited because, you know, summer is a long ways away. And a lot of stuff can actually happen. So we'll see.
You know, that's the sad part about it is that these guys, I mean, not necessarily the Kaliskos, but Damon Hay has done the herky jerk by, very undecisive that he's left fight fans from all across the world going like, look, man, I'll believe it when I see it, you know. And that's just, it's just sad that it kind of comes down to that. Coming up right now, we should have Brandon Rios Bam Bam. I believe he's going to be. Is he calling in, Gabriel, or are you calling him in?
I'll be calling him in, yeah.
And then a little later, we're going to have Melinda Cooper, who's going to be fighting soon with Samson, her promoter, will be on the call with her so that we can ask him some questions. She's going across to Costa Rica to fight for her IBF world title. Should be really interesting. And having Samson as well, because I got some questions for Samson too, who represents Sergio Martinez. So should be really interesting. You want to stay tuned. Don't hang up. Don't walk away. We still got a lot of time left here on Leaving the Ring to talk some boxing. Gabe, when are we calling in Brandon Rios? Do we have enough time to talk about another subject that's happening in the boxing world?
We have about 9 minutes.
9 minutes. Okay. You know,
yeah.
Orlando Solis, who just fought this past Saturday against the older brother, Vitaly Klitschko, you know, he came out publicly to apologize. I guess he just kind of got irate at his press conference and just started cursing and was clearly upset about what happened. He did undergo surgery, you know, about his going on with his leg. But some say that it was off a punch. I did watch the fight. You know, I wasn't really too excited about that fight because, you know, Solis's weight has always been an issue, you know, of late. So Vitaly Klitschko came in as Vitaly, as he normally does, very stationary fighter, using his height and his weight, trying to look for that one big punch with that steel hammer of his and using his jab to really kind of set that big punch up. Solis trying to get low, but you could see it. I don't know if you were able to see that, Gabe, where his leg kind of gives out underneath of him, but a punch does land by Vitaly Klitschko on the way of his leg going out.
Yeah, to me, what I saw, and the angles, you know, at least on the feed that I saw, didn't quite show the right leg buckle. What I saw was some kind of hyper, you know, kind of misstep with his left, kind of get it way too far out in front of him, bend down, get hit with that right hand. And it was a glancing blow, but, it, you know, he caught him on top of the head or kind of in the temple-ish area. Dude gets hurt, goes down, and you know, the right knee goes out of camera view, but you can only imagine something horrible went wrong. And, you know, to me, all these guys saying, oh, he was faking and, you know, screw him, he just didn't deserve his money, and, you know, Shannon Briggs was going crazy about it. And to me, you know, it's Shannon, he's a fighter, he can speak, but all these other guys, you know, they're so quick to shit on a fighter. You know, these guys take punches for your entertainment. Guy doesn't spend his whole career. He's a gold medal winner. Yeah, he's been fat his whole professional career, but he showed in nearly a career low. I believe it was a career low, 246. He looked in good shape. And granted, you know, getting into shape that one time, like I talked about with Craig McEwen, you know, now I'm finally in shape. You know, it's a habit. You know, years and years of building up your body is what it's all about, not just one time, because things like this can happen. But it's a freak accident. Guy blew his knee out. We've seen it before. Yuri Foreman had a knee injury against Miguel Cotto. Nobody called him a coward. And granted, people were like, well, you know, so he quit. He didn't want to go on. But, you know, he tore his ACL, as well as a meniscus and another ligament in there. Now, you know, in my personal experience, you know, I have a brother who tore all those things and a little bit more in his knee. The dude could not walk. You know, I'm sorry, but you don't just get up and, you know, in martial arts, we talk about blowing out knees as the quickest way to end a fight, because if you can't walk, you can't fight. Now,
right.
If you hurt his hand or if you hurt his shoulder or he got a bad cut and said, I'm out of here, I could say, okay, first round he gets a cut and you know, he wants his $1.8 million and he's out of here. Maybe they should give him a percentage of the purse, not the whole thing. I can understand that. But he blew his knee out. I mean, what do you want from the guy? And then, you know, when the medical reports come out, all those same people trashing him, you don't hear them apologizing. You don't say, oh, you know, my bad, I was totally wrong. No, they just kind of move on to the next thing, like a bunch of magpies.
Well, I better tweet that,
you know?
Then. I apologize because, no, I'm just playing. I wasn't one of those guys.
Yeah, to me, I just said, it looked like something. When he stood up, you could tell either he had been knocked the hell out by that punch or something was wrong with his legs. And it seemed to me that he was trying to step and he didn't. You know, I mean, his whole body language was jacked up when he got up. I was like, oh, they're stopping this. And
I think he was
trying to... I don't know if he got caught, you know.
Right.
I don't know what was going on, but something was wrong, you know.
Well, I think what it was, too, is he was trying to stay low. That looked like the game plan. Stay low, kind of go underneath Klitschko and try to land his punches. But at the process of that, I think that right hand that Klitschko did, that Vitelli did land, kind of helped out for that leg, for that knee to finally give out. You know, the pressure of it, because he was barely stepping on that leg, and then it kind of just buckled underneath him, you know. And these are big men, you know. I mean, regardless of being 6'2", there's a lot of weight behind that, you know. And you kind of look at these heavyweights. Some of these heavyweights have thinner legs than their upper bodies. So if you're bending down, you're squatting, and then you got a bigger guy at 230, 40 pounds dropping his weight on you, you're adding more weight. Now you got clearly over 400 pounds, you know, being pushed down on you. And it's just at one point your legs are going to give out, if, you know, whether in good condition or not. It is kind of a freak accident, but it does happen in boxing just like in anything else, you know. So, you know, we just want to wish Solis a speedy recovery, see him get back in. And hopefully somebody out there gives them a challenge. I know Thomas Adamick is getting back into the ring. He's going to get his fight coming up. Our photographer, George Jimenez, was just out there taking some pictures. I think that's what it was, because he sent me an email. So if I'm wrong about that, George, you just hit me up right now and let me know, because I haven't checked the emails. I just got a little ping saying that you sent me something, photos and all that. But Thomas Adamick, a lot of fight fans are talking about him, and rightfully so. He's made a lot of noise since he's came into the heavyweight division. Whether or not he's going to continue making noise, because he does have a scheduled fight to face one of the Klitschko's. Oh, no, he doesn't have that fight no more, right, Gabe? That fight's out the door.
Which fight?
Adamick against any of the Klitschko's.
No, that's basically off the table because...
Actually,
I think the Vitaly fight might still be in play, but the Vladimir fight is not happening at this moment.
Right,
I still have to check into that deal.
Right,
yeah.
Because that's the thing, too. I have a question, is whether... Since Vladimir's fight's off the table, does his brother pick it up? Does his brother go, okay, well, you know what? My brother's obviously got a date, supposedly, with Mr. David Haye. Let me pick up if you know, Thomas is successful with his fight. Bruce, I mean, either way, I think Adam is in the – he's a runner-up for either one of the brothers, even if David Haye does pull out of this supposed signed contract. I think he's still going to be in the mix with either one of the brothers, I think, in the summer. What do you think?
I think it's very possible. You know, we're going to see. Like I said, you know, I've kind of had some calls out and trying to get the whole situation worked out. I was hoping that to get that all done right before the show. It's time for me to call in Brandon. So let me hop away and I'll grab him and I'll be right back, Dave.
Sure, go right ahead. Leave me all alone here with all the fight fans and stuff.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
We gotta do.
He did say George Jimenez was out there, and he did say he's telling me right now. He's letting me know that Battelli did say it would be Adam McVitelli that they'll be stepping in the ring. Now I guess they have to do is draw up some contracts so that they could get in the ring, and it's a done deal. So right now it's just hearsay. I think that's what's in hopes of them. They want to do. And I hope that they do mix it up and stuff. You know, I mean, Adam Mick, does he have a chance? He's a very small guy. I believe he's at 6'1", 6'2". You know, he's not a very big guy, but he is mobile. And he has shown that he does have boxing skills to kind of keep the bigger men away from him. You know, Chris the Nightmare didn't have a whole lot of success against Adam Mick when they met up in Anaheim. Gabe, do I got you back on the line, brother?
Yes, you do, and I brought back a lightweight title holder or a lightweight champ, depending on who you ask, Brandon Rios, who just came off a sensational win over Paul Osmosis. Brandon, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, welcome. It was on the Ricardo Mayorga.
Miguel, we both were both out.
Miguel Acosta took it from Paul Osmosis, and now Brandon Rios has taken it from him. So there you go.
Yes.
My bad.
Yes, that's right. There you go. That's better.
Yeah, exactly.
We both did a little mess up.
How's the newborn, first off, brother? How's everything going?
The newborn's very good. You know, she's getting bigger already. She ain't a newborn no more to me. She's like a little King Kong right now. She's huge.
Right on, man. You know, well, the last time I saw you, I was up over there, and you guys were where Martinez was training at, because I believe your trainer's training center was under renovations at the time, right? So are you back?
Right.
What was that?
Well, we're back. We're right there. Robert opened his new gym and everything. Mm-hmm. And we're right there in Oxnard already again. Well, we've been in Oxnard, but we're not training at that gym no more. We already got our new gym. But it looks to me, Robert's trying to open up a new gym now. You know, now he's saying it's too small for him. So I don't know what's up with that guy. But, yeah, I think we're going to get another gym now.
Now, when I was down there, I watched you spar, man. And I got to say, it was intense. It was a lot of fun because, you know, you just go straight down to business. When you were sparring Victor Cano, and you guys were going at it, I was telling Gabe, this is what more or less what I'm going to see happen when you get in with Miguel Acosta, and pretty much it was. You know, Miguel Acosta was using the ring, and but you continuously kept that pressure on him. You know, you were walking him down, you were landing them shots, and every time you did corner him, you made sure you threw a flurry of punches, not just one or two. You weren't looking for that one big shot. You were looking to land multiple shots. I mean, was that the whole game plan from the beginning?
Well, like you was there with us when we were sparring with Victor Cano and everything. You seen that the first couple of rounds, it was hard with Cano, and he had a similar style as Acosta. So, you know, we knew it was going to be very hard in the first couple of rounds, but after that, after I put some more pressure on him and keep my game on him, my will, we wasn't going to give him the later rounds, but it's going to be a very hard fight and a very difficult fight. And as you can see, it was at first. And then I just stepped up my game and just lived to my corner and follow the plan and just do what I was told to do.
You know, after that fight here, Brandon, I got to tell you, man, that first off, man, it was a great, great fight. It was exciting, fan-friendly. If that was, to me, was a possible... It was a great fight in terms of your career-wise, you know, because you were put in with another guy that was in his prime, another guy that really, honestly, some fight fans were picking him to beat you because they really didn't believe in your abilities of how you were going to come into this fight. You know, I mean, I've even said you're a big 135-pounder. I still don't know how you're getting down to that weight class. But now past that, now we're hearing some rumors of possibly getting Marcos Antonio Barrera. And my only question to you is, why? Why him?
Well, you know, I don't. I'm not the one that does all that, the matchmaking, all the one with all of the stuff to do with all that stuff, whatever. I'm not the promoter. I'm not the manager. I'm the fighter. And if his manager and his promoter are talking good with my manager and my promoter, whatever, if they're the same, whatever, I don't know, that's really up to them. Why him? You know what? Sometimes you got to go back down to get back up. Marco Antonio Barrera, he has a big name. You know, he's part still experienced. He's part still has something in little gas in his engine. I'm not for sure. But, you know, that's not really my job. My job is to train and to fight, and that's about it. If that's the guy they wanted to pick, and if my manager and them, they feel that that's a good move for my career right now to get to the next level, then I guess I go with it. You know, I don't argue and I don't disagree with anything what they say. I don't go against what Robert and my manager Cameron Duncan says. You know, whatever they do, they know best for me and my career, so I just go with whatever they say.
Well, the reason why I say why him is this. I made a joke about this, and you know, but in reality, it wasn't really a joke. I had asked Top Rank, are you promoting fighters or are you hiring assassins? Because, like you said, if there's a little bit gas left in him, you're definitely, I mean, damn it, I gotta be honest. If there's any gas left in the Marco Antonio Barrera, I think you're going to take out the gas. Not only that, you're going to leave him with an oil spill. I mean, if he's looking in terms of ending his career, I think you're going to end his career pretty bad. I mean, I just don't see Barrera being a major threat to you. Just in terms, he's not a very big guy. You know, he's not a big 135 pounder. That's not his weight, and he's going to be fighting one of the more devastating punchers at 135 pounds, and a guy that could take a good punch. You know, I mean, you've shown that with the Miguel Costa fight. I mean, you were hurt in that fight. We saw that, but you recouped so fast, and that just kind of boils down to your condition.
Well, yeah, you know, like I said, you know, I can't really tell you anything. Like, no, I don't want this guy, you know, because I have been calling out the bigger guys. I've been calling out Marquez. I have been calling out Soto and them. But, you know, if they gave me this guy, you know, this guy wants a piece of me because he wants to become a world champion again. He wants to try to become a world champion, be the first Mexican to become a world champion in four different weight class. I can't really, you know what, I can't say anything. If the money's right, I guess, you know, we're going to take it or something, you know. That's not, like I told you, that's not my job. My job is to train and to fight. And if he's willing to fight and he's willing to, like you said, maybe, you know, he's old already and he came out of retirement. Some of those guys are still good. Some of those guys are not. We're going to see if he's got really old over the next day or if he's old and good, like Bernard Hawkins. Old, but he's still doing great. So we're going to see. And if he comes and if he fights him, I'm ready for him. You know that. I'm 100% all the time. I'm always ready for all my fighters. I never take any opponent lightly.
Absolutely.
Brandon, let's hop back into the fight you just had. We haven't really had a chance to. We talked a little bit at the fight the other night, but we haven't had a chance to have you on the show and break it down. And I'll be straight up honest with you. I didn't pick you to win the fight. I didn't think it was a great style for you. I thought he would move a lot and be able to land the way he was early on. I'll be straight up with you. But
I picked you, bro. I picked you.
And you straight up proved me wrong. But
You know what?
He seemed to really hurt you early on.
After you saying that, I think we should just end this conversation now. I don't want to even talk to him.
Oh, shit.
I just say we should.
I know, man.
You know, a lot of people thought I was not going to win because the fact that the way his style was and the way my style is, they say I'm just a forward-coming guy with no movement, no discipline, nothing. I just throw punches and get hit a lot. But, you know, a lot of people don't know really much about me. It looks like I get hit a lot, but, you know, some of those punches don't even land, like, hardly. Yeah, some of them touch me, but, you know, I move a little bit. They only really land, like, full force on me. And a lot of people, he wasn't the only one that didn't think I was not going to pull out. A lot of people thought I was not going to pull out because of the fact that his style. But, you know what, I just proved the world, and I just proved everybody that doubted me, you know what? Keep doubting me, you know, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it when you keep doubting me because I love proving people wrong.
Now,
absolutely.
He did seem to hurt you around the third or the fourth. It seemed like things were not going your way. And I think you mentioned when we talked, it was a body shot in there that people didn't really see that really got to you. And he kind of buzzed you to the head a little bit. But what was it that turned it around? And talk about that moment, too.
Well, let's see. The third round, you know, I was doing all right, you know, through the whole round until, like, almost the ending of the last, like 30 seconds or something like that. I was watching a video the other day. 30 seconds of the last round of the third round, he got me with, you know, he threw a little flurry. I got careless. I went in with my head down, my hands down, and I got careless. And he caught me pretty good at the ending of the third round. So I went back, you know, Robert did boom, he yelled at me, told me what my plan was, keep my hands up and everything. The fourth round, right when the bell rang in the fourth round, like in 2 minutes, he come with a good body shot, you know. Oh, man, that shit hurt so bad that I had to back up. I was backing up, and I don't usually back up, so that's when I was backing up. He was hitting me, and he was catching me good, but you know what? I had to keep my will, you know. I couldn't give up. I couldn't, like, go down or anything. Even though it hurt so bad, come on, hit me. I don't care. I'm not going to go down. You better hit me pretty hard and knock me down. And then after that, I went back to the corner. Robert told me, come on, Brandon. Come on, keep your hands up, put the pressure, stay in there, use your jab, come on, body hook, body uppercut, body, come on, work the body, use your jab, get in there. So when I went back in the fifth round, you know, my jab came out more, and then the body shots, and then the pressure was even more, with more pressure, more throwing, and, you know, in the sixth round, I just cut him with the beautiful jab, which it was nice.
Did you feel like any problem with it?
Go ahead, Dave.
No, I was going to say, Bam, did you feel like at any point that you were not in control in this fight? I mean, did you feel like you had to play catch-up at any point during the fight?
After the sixth round, after the fourth round, I had to come up and, like, you know what, I got to change it up fast. Cause if I keep doing what I'm doing, yeah, this guy's not really hurting me, but he's landing good shots and he's getting his points in and everything, so I got to step up my game, so... After the fourth round, the fifth round, I stepped it up a little more, and in the sixth round, that's when I started stepping up a little more. So half of the fight, I had to step it up quick. And you know what? I think I've done a great job.
Even knowing that Ellie probably had you up by 10 rounds after the sixth round, you still felt like you were behind?
Well, I felt it close. like the judges had him. I felt it close, but you know, Ellie's cool. Ellie's gonna be one. You know, he has a score right now. I'm just like, it was close. It was really close. And you know what? Like I said, I had to step up my game quick, and it was just a great fight for the fans to watch.
Do you even think about that, like, in the same way that fans do? Like, we'll be going, well, we're scoring it the whole time. Are you scoring it in your head, or is it more like a feeling, like of momentum, or you know, this guy might be up, or he's kind of, his energy is, you know, rising, or how is it that you score a fight in your mind in a fight, or do you even look at it that way? Does that make sense?
You know what? I don't really look at it like that. The only way sometimes I know when, like, I'm kind of behind or something, if it's close, when I go back to the corner and I see the expression on Robert's face. I see his face expression or something, or his voice or something, the way he talks. Then I know, like, wow, I need to do something to make him, to change the tone of his voice or something. So,
Interesting. And so,
you know, that's the way I know. But I don't really keep score of it or nothing, because if I keep score, then I'll probably get knocked out or something.
Right.
I mean,
you
know what
you're curious, you know?
you know, it's strange that, because, you know, I mean, what people get off of you, you know, Bam, is you're just this outburst kind of guy, you know, that just kind of says whatever's on his mind. But and in terms of that, you actually like to fight. I mean, when I got to meet you in person and watch you, I mean, you were basically having fun in there. But when you step into the ring, when it comes to fight night, you could see it's all business with you. Your face completely changes. It's completely business. I mean, you seem really calm. Even in training camp, you seem really, really calm. Except for when my son pulled out that fake blade on you. You got nervous. I seen that look in your face.
Oh, yeah. I was about to take out running, man, when you pulled out that knife. I was like, what? Hey, yeah, he took a knife to the dam.
I know, man. But, you know, do you ever get nervous, though? I mean, do you ever get nervous where you sit there and you maybe overthink the match a little bit too much? Does that ever worry you a little bit?
Tell you the truth, man. My wife can tell you the same thing, too. Before this fight, I never get nervous before I get in the ring or before I go to the locker room. This fight, I was like butterflies badly. I was nervous really bad or something in my room before the fight, like 3 hours before the fight. I was already nervous. I was like, damn, I'm fighting for a world fire. You know, I was just already thinking like, damn it. You know, I can't believe I'm fighting for a world title. So, you know, I started getting nervous. And then, you know, when I got to the locker room, I even got more nervous. Like, I wanted to piss myself. I was so nervous. And then, you know, I started hitting the mids, and it, little by little, it was going away because I have my people surround me. The people that I always have in my locker room, I started seeing them in the locker room again. I started focusing out all the negative, all the positive, everything. I just started focusing on everything and just concentrating on doing what I'm doing and clearing my mind. And that's when it started calming down. And then when I walked to the ring, I was more calm. And then when the bell rang, I'm like the calmest person. Like, damn, I'm like high fighting. I'm like so calm and relaxed.
Right. You know, we had I want to talk about somebody else. This is a guy that's always brought up. I mean, I think you guys are pretty much paired when somebody's speaking about your name. This other person's name has to be brought up, and when that person's being spoken to, your name's got to be brought up. We had Victor Ortiz, and I don't know if he had a chance, but he now has a different song and dance where before he would say, he needs me, I don't need to fight him. Where now he's more like, you know what? I want to fight Brandon Rios. You know, I would like that fight. If, you know, he goes, after I beat Andre Berto, if Brandon still wants it, I'm willing to get in the ring. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, it took him 2 years to say something. You know, he's going up to 147, then he say something about that. But there's really not much to say. You know, he's always saying that I need him and everything to make money. I'm making the same money as he is. I'm a world champion now, and he's still none. So, you know, it's like, to me, to him, it's like, he needs me now. He's hating me, and he's wishing he can do what I did. But, you know, it's all good. Let him be. He got a, so true, Berto's going to, something bigger for him. Berto's going to turn, hold on, huh? Berto's going to rip him a new asshole. That's my opinion. And
right.
Like I said, I'm not really worried about that guy no more. He really got pimped out, and he's already done all of it.
So when you hear him say something like, you know, well, if Brandon Rios, Bam Bam wants to end his career, let's make it happen. I mean, do you laugh at that, or do you take him serious? Like, okay, now he wants to fight me. Let's make it happen.
I laugh because if he couldn't end Peterson's career, come on now. How you gonna do that to me?
Right.
You know, he's gonna run. We're gonna run the marathon, but nah, you know, like I said, it's like when I laugh hard. I almost pissed myself when I heard that. And you know, it's funny to me. It's really funny. And like I said, if he tell you in my career he couldn't in Peterson, and he better concentrate on his career because Berto is no joke, and I think Berto's gonna end his.
Yeah, I'm picking Berto in that fight, too. I think he's going to have to go back to the drawing board. It seems almost like Golden Boy's kind of like, dude, you know, like, you know, put up or shut up, and here's a tough fight for you to put up, you know?
And you know what? It's like he's running his mouth, and everything. And like I said, Berto's going to lay the smackdown on them, and that's about it. And then De La Hoya's going to be done with them, and then he's back, part of the drawing board, back on Fox Sports, back on Telefutura, or back somewhere else, you know? He's going to be done because nobody's going to want to see him no more because he's going to be running. And they don't want a runner. They want a fighter. They want a warrior. They want a man, not a girl.
Right.
But for you, looking at, you know, you kind of talked about this, that you don't really, you leave the business to your managers and all that, and then you just basically trust them to make the right fight for you. But, you know, looking around the lightweight division, I mean, you know, you got Humberto Soto there. Marquez seems to be more preoccupied with Pacquiao than anything. You know, Miguel Vasquez is there. Do you want to unify the titles? How long do you want to stay at lightweight? Or to you, is it just about getting the best fights?
You know what? To me, it's getting the best fight and fighting the best out there. And, you know, I would love to unify the titles. There's a lot of people out there at 135 that's calling me. There's a guy named Henry Lundy or something like that. There's
Lundy,
John
yeah.
Mary. There's John Mary or whatever his name is from Europe. There's Miguel Vasquez now. He wants a piece of me. And, you know, Barrera wants a piece of me. So, you know, the only person that don't want a piece of me is Soto, I believe. And I want a piece of him, but he keeps making excuses and everything. Now I heard he's going to 140 after this fight. So it's like, come on, man. I want to unify my title with his title. Or I want to fight the best to show that I'm the best. So, like, hopefully my manager and, you know, Robert, they know what I want. They know what they have, and they know what I can do. So they will find me a great fight, and I'm ready for anybody.
Well, maybe you could just rematch Paulus Moses and Ricardo Mayorga. You know, you could always just go to those fights again. And,
right.
Take on a quick show, you know.
I had a blah moment right there. I had a blah moment. I was like, what the hell? That's Ricardo Mayorga. Me and my daughter was sleeping. Everybody woke up.
I had the same problem.
What? How much longer do you stay at 135, though, Brandon? I mean, are you guys looking to move up to 140 later this year or maybe early next year?
Well, you know, our plan is to get, like, maybe two or three more fights at 135 and move up to 140. That's the plan, and why not? I can do 140. I can make one. I'm a big lightweight. I still can make 135, but you know what? I can make 140 easy and still be strong. So why not move to 140? So me and Robert have been talking about it. Maybe in two or three more fights, we're going to go up to 140. Maybe if possible this year, you might see me fight at 140. So we'll see what happens.
Well, there you go, brother. Well, again, man, thanks for coming on, leaving the ring. It's always a pleasure to have you on, brother.
Thank you very much. Thank you guys for having me, and appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Hey,
thank you.
And I would like to say to everybody out there that's hearing this, Saturday, the 26th of March, Mikey Garcia is going to be fighting on HBO with Matt Remenard. So it's going to be a good fight. So hopefully everybody can tune into that fight. Support one of our teammates.
Hey, it's going to be a great
fight. Down for us. I'm curious what you think about it.
Oh, that fight is going to be very tough, you know. But I think Mike can pull off. I know Matt Remenard from the amateur. He beat me in the amateurs. But you know what? I think Mikey's very smart and very, very, very smart and very strong in the ring, and he doesn't waste any of his punches. So I think Mikey's going to become the new NABO and the NABS champion that night.
Cool.
It's going to be
a good
fight.
I'm picking him too. Yeah,
yeah, I'm picking
Mikey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, champ. Oh, sorry, Dave. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, it's good. I wanted to say bam, bam. Hey, thanks again for coming on, brother. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you guys for having me and everything. You got me when I really woke up because I can't really say that much shit because I really woke up. Next time I will turn that sleep.
All right, brother.
All right, brother. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Bye-bye.
There you go. Brandon Bam Bam Rios, who just woke up from a nap and was dreaming of knocking out Ricardo Mayorga.
I mean, he has an excuse. I actually was pulling awake and doing a show, and I screwed up. But I was thinking of the guy that he beat. Man, you know what?
if this person texts me one more time during the show, I'm gonna throw my phone out the window. He knows who she is. He needs to stop.
Well, you know, we need to call in our next guest is Efren, who's going to be fighting on the Thompson card this Friday night as well. And he's been hosting that for a few times already. And let me get his number here really quick. And, you know, Hank Lundy, who had fought John Molina, is calling out, and he's Hank Lundy just signed with Boxing 360. If I got that right, right there, Gabe. You there, Gabe?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I am.
And
you'll mute.
Yeah, and you know, that's actually an interesting fight there. If Bam Bam wants to stay busy and get in with Hank Lundy, who's a very confident fighter, you know, a guy that could give him some problems in terms of boxing. But whether he can uphold to what Bam Bam's going to bring, which is that pressure, is another, you know.
I always think that's weird. You know, like, he lost to John Molina Jr.
Right.
Why not? I'd rather see John Molina Jr. fight against Brandon Rios, you know, the winner of that fight, as opposed to Hank Lundy, who showed that he can't handle pressure.
Absolutely. Efren, are you there, brother?
Yes, it's me.
Efren, how you doing, man? You're live right now on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. Hey, brother, really quick, your last name, can you pronounce it for me so I get it correct? You know, because I heard somebody else was telling me your last name, and I was like, that doesn't sound right. It doesn't. I don't think that's how you pronounce it correctly.
Yeah, my last name is Esquivias.
Esquivias, see? Okay. They were saying Esquivios, and I'm like, Esquivios? It's no Esquivios. Esquivias. All right. Efren Esquivias, who's going to be fighting on the Thompson's card this Friday. How did the weigh-in go for you, man?
Everything went according to plan. You know, I was a pound and a half under, actually.
Really?
I was shocked, you know. I never showed up that much underweight.
Now, is that because you're skipping the meal, or is because training camp has been that good?
Yeah, because training really good and nutrition has been really good. It's been such a good diet.
You're gonna have to talk closer to your phone, brother, because you're sounding like really far from us. What was that again?
I said my nutrition has been really good, and I stuck to my diet really good, so I'm ready to go.
Now, you have been labeled as an exciting fighter. You know, it's not the first time you've headlined this, the Thompson, right? And what makes you think that so many people are attracted to you? I mean, it seems that your name's been thrown out there a lot. I mean, you come out of the wild card, Jim, but at the same time, though, I hear your name a lot when I go down to L.A. A lot of people go, hey, have you seen Efren yet? Have you seen him yet? You know, he's exciting. This guy comes to fight. He makes sure that everyone that watches him walks away talking about him. What makes you that exciting?
Well, I guess because, I'm a crowd pleaser. And if I have the chance to knock my opponent out, I go for the knockout. And I'm always leaving the show knowing I left everything in the ring. And the crowd is always pleased with my performance.
Now, when, you know, because we hear this a lot, too. A lot of fighters will say, well, I'm being trained under, you know, Freddie Roach. Are you being trained by Freddie Roach, or is there a head trainer on your side helping you out?
Well, Freddie's the main guy, you know, but, you know, he got his priorities. He's right now, he's with Pacquiao. And I also work with Paul Marroquin on the side, which is Freddie's assistant, and he will be here today, tomorrow. And whenever Freddie can't make it, Paul's there. He's always there.
So he's not going to be there tomorrow then with you. It's going to be his assistant.
Yeah, assistant, Paul Marroquin.
Okay, Paul Marroquin. Now, when you get somebody else, his assistant, even though he's the assistant, he's probably been there with you during the whole training camp, Is that a big effect for you? I mean, does that affect you a little bit in any way, knowing that the head trainer is not there? Because I know other trainers, other fighters have said no, but when it comes to doing performance, performance-wise, when you have to trigger it, you could see the difference. You could see the lack of guidance. I mean, we saw that just 2 weeks ago with Andy Lee with Andy Lee and the fighter that was across from him, I just went blank right now, where their head trainers were not there. And then Freddie Roach was training the other guy, where his trainer had to settle for Jesse. And you could see the kind of they were not getting the motivation or the guidance that was needed.
Yeah, no, it had no effect at all, man. I believe in my hard training. You know, I always train really hard, and that's really, really what makes me perform out there and gets me through the fights. Not just Freddie. Freddie, he adds a little more motivation. But even if he's not there, I just know I did did what I had to do in training, and that's what gets me through the fights.
Absolutely. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel. Gabe, you got any questions for Efron?
Okay.
Gabe,
I don't really know a lot about your career. I haven't seen much tape of you. If you can just, you know, introduce yourself to the fans, kind of, you know, explain to us the beginnings of your career as a boxer, how you got to this point.
Yeah, you know, I was a... You know, I've won the national amateur Golden Gloves, and that's pretty much the biggest accomplishment in the amateurs. And served pro after that, didn't make the 2008 Olympics, and that was in 2007 when I turned pro. And just been handling my business in the pros, and I started working with Freddie in my seventh professional fight, because things wasn't working out with my former coach Dennis, and that's where I've been ever since, and turned it up in the pros now.
You've been knocking out pretty much everybody that you've been putting in so far here. I mean, you have your last fight was the TKO in the eighth round. Your other fight was in five. The other fight was in. And this is all in Ontario. I mean, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, almost 6 in a row in Ontario, California, at the DoubleTree Hotel for the Thompsons. I mean, is it fair to say that that's your home, Efren?
Well, that's pretty much, yeah. I'm starting to gather a following down here in Ontario, and starting to feel a lot comfortable, but, you know, I can't get too comfortable. Hopefully, looks like I might be fighting in an Okita theater next month. You know, everything coming out good. So I'm just trying to build a fan base everywhere I go. That'll be the plan.
Now, John... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, John Molina is a 28 guy that has 28 wins, and it seems like he's the more polished guy since the other guys you've been put in with. The other guys, they're pretty much kind of on a building mode in terms of getting in the ring with you. You know, they didn't have a stellar career. But John Molina looks like probably one of the toughest guys that you'll be stepping in with. How do you feel about that? Do you think that this is the toughest guy? Because the other guys have been just two wins, you know, maybe one loss here and there, but not long-term like John Molina here.
Yes, he's proven through his career that he's a, you know, he's a veteran. He's been two world title fights, and I know he's going to come in and take that win from me, and he's not going to be intimidated with my record, but, you know, he's been fighting at a lower weight class, and I'm just ready. I know I'm ready. I did my job at the gym and ready to take this guy out.
Go ahead, Gabe.
You've been with Freddie since the seventh fight, you said. What's been the biggest change that he's brought to your table? You know, has he made you sit down on your punches, get you out of the amateur style? What has it been?
Yeah, that's definitely the sitting down on the punches, and working on angles and knowing where you're at, cutting the ring, and getting out of the ropes. And just, you know, just working on certain situations where you could be in a fight and taking advantage of the, you know, the situation you're in.
You know what I like?
What's that?
You know, because I've met Efren a few times and stuff, man, and Efren always has a smile on his face, but if you see him, you can tell this guy's a fighter, man, by heart. he has this certain smile about him where he's like, yeah, this is me, Efren, you know, really nice guy, man, you know, you can tell good-hearted, but you can tell, man, he's got that look in his eyes where he's ready to explode. He's ready to get in there and handle his business, you know. I wanted to be out there tomorrow, Efren, to check you out, but I got something scheduled. I got to be out there next week. We're doing something. But and I'm going to I actually want to call you maybe tomorrow and talk to you about it because I want to kind of involve you in it. But I've been wanting to see you live. You know, like I said, every time I go down over there, everybody's like, you got to check him out, man. This guy, this kid, he's explosive. He's exciting, you know, and, you know, out of the wild card. And I know my boy from Art from Stand Up Fight has went out there and checked you out. So I've heard a lot of good feedback and stuff, but I haven't had a chance to watch a whole lot of a tape like Gable was mentioning and stuff. So really looking forward to you coming out and eventually kind of moving over from the Thompsons and maybe getting some national television so that the whole world can see what you're bringing to the table because you do have an exciting style.
Yeah, that's definitely my next step. Hopefully they're talking about Showtime, ESPN and Showtime, you know, and I'm just ready. I feel like it's the time for me to shine and demonstrate, you know, what I'm capable of and ready for the next level, you know. Hopefully the 15th fight I'll be fighting for another belt, which will get me ranked on top 10 in the world, and soon I'll be fighting for a world title in no time.
Now, another fighter that's going to be fighting this Friday as well is going to be on Solo Boxeo. I'm not sure if he's still there, but Alejandro Alacan Perez used to fight out of the wild card. I don't know if he's still – is he still fighting out of there?
Yes, he is. Alejandro's a good fighter, really strong. Man, I can't – I wish I want to see that fight. I'm going to check it out after because –
right.
I think he's gonna beat Escalante. Alejandro's a really tough guy.
Really tough kid. So let me ask you, have you guys sparred, being that you guys are almost, you know, in weight, you know what I mean? You guys are in that same division, right?
Right. He's at 126 now, but...
So have you guys mixed it up?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Alejandro, man, they got his heart in the body, and he's got a lot of heart, never stops coming. A lot of real good conditions, so, man, it's going to be a really good fight.
That's some tape I'd like to see is you guys mixing it up. And I mean, because I say too, Alejandro, I think Alejandro is going to take the fight against Antonio Escalante, man. And hopefully you're successful with your fight. I don't see why you wouldn't be on Friday night on the Thompson card, a Doubletree. Efren, again, brother, thank you for calling in and chopping it up here with us on Leaving the Ring, man. And wish you all the success. Let me know what happens, though. Either text me or call me, or I'll call you after your fight so I can know how it went. And I do have two writers that are going to be there covering the event for me.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, David and Gabriel, for having me on the show on Leaving in the Ring.
Yeah, man. I'm excited, dude. I'm going to actually try to make it out there. I love that venue, and just the crowd's always the best over there. So hopefully I'll be able to make it out, man. I want to wish you the very best, you know, and good luck to you.
Yeah, you got to make it out there to go check him out. Like I said, a lot of folks are really stoked up about Efren, and they're saying this is an exciting fighter. You know, and I did see a little bit of tape on him. He is, you know, but I like to see him, you know, continue growing. It's always fun to watch a guy when he hasn't made that big name. You see the hunger out of them. So, Efren, keep doing your thing, brother, and we're going to keep pulling for you.
Thank you guys so much, man.
All right, you take care.
Take care. Bye.
Take it easy.
You know
what I love about that venue, dude, is the press row. You know, normally press rows are like two or three rows back from the ring. You know, usually like TVs in the front, and then, you know, there's a row for Dan Raphael, and then there's a row for everybody else. And for the Ontario shows, we actually sit on the apron. Like the last time I was there, I was like literally right next to the timekeeper. So you get blood on you, you get sweat on you. You're really just right there for the fight, and there's a huge difference between like third or fourth row and being right there on the apron. And you've sat there for sparring sessions. It's you can feel the violence. You can see the expressions change. You can hear the punches better. That room is, you know, a lot of great fighters have come through there. You know, a lot of really exciting guys that we know now. Tim Bradley spent a lot of his time developing there. Fight fans, if you're in the area and you haven't had a chance to go there, check it out. It's an experience unlike many others, you know.
I'm just reading your text right now, and you're absolutely right. That venue, I haven't had a chance to go out there and actually witness that venue. But I've heard a lot about it. You know, Barbara, one of our writers, and Saul, another one of our writers, go out there all the time to cover that event. We have a new photographer, and he's going to be out there too as well to take some pictures for the Thompson card that Red is bringing on board. So I wanted to make it this time for this Friday, but you know, being that the schedule is just, it's going to be really tough for me to head out there. So I decided not to. And especially with this weather, man, this weather is just no joke. And everybody, please try to stay dry, stay safe. Don't go out driving, especially at this time right now. It's so ugly out there. I mean, I have 5 palm trees in my backyard. So in the middle of the night, you hear the branches break off. They land on top of the roof. And I swear to you, one of these branches is going to be heavy enough to go through my roof, you know, and into my living room. Or, you know, hopefully it doesn't hit my big TV. But because I just can't afford to buy another TV right now, Gabriel, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, it's hard being a pimp. What can you say?
It's hard work being me. That's all I got to
say. Really is.
Melinda Cooper is going to be calling in. She's going to be talking about a Costa Rica fight that she's going to be going down to and hopefully bringing back the title back home. You know, she's making a lot of noise. She is with the Samson Group. And she should be calling in, telling us a little bit of what should we be expecting from her and her camp going all the way to Costa Rica. Now, in terms of the fights that are happening, I just lost my train of thought here because I'm trying to read when people shooting up and asking us if we could talk about this and that. We did already talk about this weekend's fights that are going to be happening, so you might have to try to catch the archive about it. So if you just kind of tuned in late, we apologize, and we did already talk about Lucian Bute. But there are a lot of other things in boxing that we can still talk about, and then one of them is Andre Ward and Arthur Abraham. They're going to be meeting at the Home Depot, right? Is that right? Home Depot in California. So that's going to be really interesting. It's a very small, compact venue. It's a really homey and really in-your-face type of venue so that you're not going to miss anything. It's one of those venues that it's whatever seat you get, it's going to be a good seat. Trust me, you're going to enjoy it a whole lot. And Chris Nimer has been added to that undercard, and they're going to be having a press conference on Tuesday at 11:30. So if you have a chance and you're over there in Sherman Oaks, you might want to stop by and check it out. Myself and Gable will be out there covering it, and I'm really excited about seeing, you know, Andre Ward. I pretty much have been following Andre for a very long time, even before he was getting any television time when he was fighting at San Jose HP Pavilion at the Shark Tank. All the way down when he was fighting at the Tashi Palace, and now he's fighting in Oakland. Now it's been changed to Home Depot, which is you could still say it's still in his home ground because he is from the United States. There's going to be a lot of Americans coming out to support Andre Ward. Arthur Abraham needs to make a statement, needs to make a comeback. He did have a tune-up fight to try to get him back into the mix because he felt like he was staying stale. Whether or not he's going to do fairly well against Andre Ward, who's been on a great winning streak, and it seems to get better and better with the season that he gets provided by his trainer, Hunter. I don't know. I don't know how well Arthur Abraham's going to do here, Gabriel.
I do. He's not going to do well at all. You know, he's a guy that's on the downs, you know, and Andre Ward is just getting better every time. And I can't really think of an opponent that is more tailor-made for him. You know, he's Arthur Abraham is slow, he's stationary, he's one-dimensional, and he just has not proven to be a top 168-pounder. You know, he just really hasn't. And so, you know, and by tailor-made, it's not like, you know, Andre's fought his way to this point, you know, and this is the opponent that's now in line for him. So it's not, you know, like he chose this guy. He knew that he would be part of the deal. And I've spoken to Andre a few times now about this fight, running into him as he was commentating for the World Series of Boxing. And I also did, you know, another separate interview. And, you know, he's approaching this just like any other fight. You know, he's gonna be as focused as he has ever been. He understands that one punch can change the entire fight and change his whole life and his whole career. And that is the one thing that Arthur Abraham does bring. If you pause in front of him too long, you know, he can end the night. So he is dangerous, but I just think that everything that Andre brings to the table is just too much. You know, he moves too much. He's too intelligent. He's too versatile. The thing that I am curious about is strength in this fight. If it becomes a physical type war, you know, Arthur Abraham is a tough guy, is a strong guy, and it does take a lot to get him out of there. You know, he hasn't been stopped. You know, and so I kind of wonder if you know, that's something that I know Andre always looks for some sort of extra edge, some sort of extra bit of motivation, and I do wonder if that's something that he's going to bring to the table. You know, in terms of motivation, is am I going to be the first guy to stop him? But what a great venue. You know, it's going to be full of Armenians. There's a big population down here that's going to be there to support Arthur Abraham. I think it's going to feel like a road game for Andre Ward. And it is going to be interesting to see him kind of fighting, you know, out of his backyard. You know, he's not going to be fighting at home where he's got that Oakland crowd supporting him. He's going to have to bring it against Arthur Abraham, and surrounded by a bunch of people who are more fans of Abraham than him. So, you know, there's a few challenges here, I think the least of which is Arthur Abraham, you know. So, you know, I fully expect Ward to kind of keep, you know, fulfilling the promise I saw early on in him. And especially when I, you know, saw him coming into this tournament, I thought, this guy's the dark horse, you know. Everybody's going to sleep on him, but give him a few fights and everybody's going to be talking about him being the guy to beat. And I still believe that.
You know, another fight that I want to talk about and is a fight that's happening April 9th. I believe it's going to be on Solo Book Sale. I'm not really sure yet. But Danny Swift Green is going to be getting back in the ring. Danny Swift Garcia is going to be getting back in the ring with the guy that was supposed to be retired. Nate Campbell, the Galaxy Warrior, who had just recently kind of announced his retirement, but now has unannounced his retirement, saying, yo, I'm going to get back into the ring, and I'm going after Danny. You know, I'm a little confused with that, because Nate Campbell has shown really poor performances with his last fights, and you know, I don't know where Golden Boy's going with the Swift, you know. I don't know exactly what statement he's going to be making on Nate Campbell. It's not a good fight for me. I mean, Nate Campbell, I saw he was doing a radio show. I say stick to doing radio, brother. Don't get back in the ring anymore. I mean, he's a really intelligent guy when you speak to him. He's very radio friendly. I'd like to hear him continue in his radio personality career rather than see him continue in his boxing career, you know, especially with Swift. I think that's just a poor job for them to get in the ring with Garcia. You know, I think there's better names out there for Garcia to make. I know they're looking for a name for him to make on, but Nate Campbell is not that name. I think there's better deserved opponents out there, Gabe. What do you think?
Yeah, and I don't think I really don't see this as a meaningful fight. I mean, he's not, you know, Nate Campbell's not a 140-pounder. He's kind of shown that. And he's certainly not, you know, a welterweight. He's a guy that peaked out at 135, and that was about it. And seeing him move up in weight, especially when he's just kind of retiring, and now he wants to, you know, come up to 140 and take on a guy that's not in his prime, but is heading there quickly.
Right.
To me, it's just they're just banking a win, getting a name scalp, getting some experience. But I don't expect Nate to finish this fight. And, you know,
I don't even expect him to make it to the second round with the Swift. You know, I just think the kid
might go that far. I think four. I'll say four. you know. But that's about it, you know. It's not John Figueroa, which I thought was just a travesty of a fight. But it's definitely not. You're absolutely right to kind of question, like, where are they going with this? You know, like, what, to me, why fight this guy other than he's a name fight? You know, when somebody's sitting there saying I'm about to retire, to me, that's not really the time to go. Let's fight him. Let him make a statement. It just isn't.
Obviously Danny's got to keep doing what he's got to do to keep getting the wins on his belt. But, you know, Nate Campbell just is, to me, is a smart enough guy to really know. And he's also a grandfather to know, like, look, maybe it's money. I don't know. We don't know a man's financial reasoning. But, you know, you got to sometimes be smart enough to say, you know what, I'm just being used as a stepping stone. That's something that didn't want to be used as in my career. But now that's just came down to it. And let's patch in our next guest who's calling in right now that wants to talk to us. She's going to be going to Costa Rica. Melinda Cooper, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing, Melinda?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Let me bring in Claudia Ulises. How you doing, Claudia?
Hi, guys. I'm here. How are you?
Thank you for having us on. Hey, no problem. So you're going to Costa Rica here, Melinda. Now, how do you feel about that? Because a lot of women that do leave their hometown or home state or home country that go overseas, they tend not to bring back the title.
Oh, no. That doesn't intimidate me. I'm excited to actually go overseas and go over to Costa Rica. I've never been, so it's something new.
Nothing, I mean, so it doesn't add any pressure to you where you have to feel you have to go over there and get a TKO or, I mean, because I've just heard so many stories for women boxers is that they go over there, they can have a stellar performance, but it just doesn't seem to work out. Claudia, I'm going to put you on mute because your phone's really, really bad, okay?
Okay.
I'm sorry, Melinda. I don't know if you were able to hear that question.
Oh, yeah, no, I heard. No, you know, that usually happens more over in, like, in China and, like, Germany and Japan or something. Costa Rica, I haven't heard really too much of that happening over there, so I'm really not too worried about it.
What exactly do you think you need to do to make sure that you bring back that title?
Do what I was taught and what I've been trained to do, you know, win. I just go in there and do exactly what I'm told, and I don't have no doubt that I won't come out with the win.
Right. Let me bring in your trainer here, James. James, are you on the line with us?
I'm here, my man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, brother. So let's go with Melinda here. You know, she has no worries about going to Costa Rica. And she's saying, hey, I'm going to do what I've been trained to do, what I'm taught to do, and I'm going to go over there. But, you know, you're a trainer. You have to watch out for particular things for her. She's going to Costa Rica. She's going to foreign grounds. You guys have to be in the best shape and then have the best strategy. So when you're working on these strategies with her, what exactly are you carving up for her to perform when she gets to Costa Rica?
Well, the first thing, you know, Melinda, you have to understand, Melinda's been boxing since she was 10 years old. She was a 10-time national amateur boxing champion. She's not a rookie, you know. She's 26 years old. She's 21-0 as a professional. And it's a great time in her life. We were just speaking a few minutes ago. She's going to Costa Rica. It's going to be a fight. It's a world title fight. And it's going to be a tough fight. But will she win? Absolutely she'll win. I can guarantee it. I put my house on it. She will win. I promise you. Ada Velez is in for a world of trouble. It doesn't even matter what she brings to the table because she's going to get taxed one way or another.
Absolutely. And Ada Velez,
we're going to welcome her to the islands, baby. But in a bad way.
Now, you're undefeated. You know, your fighter, Melinda, you're undefeated. You got 21 wins, 11 KOs, and you're fighting a girl that's got 16 wins. Not a lot of pop, you know. She's coming from San Jose, Costa Rica here. So more or less, you're gonna be the. Is it fair enough to say you're gonna be the puncher in this fight?
I'd say so. Yeah, it's fair enough.
So are you going to have the puncher's mentality in this fight?
No, you know, I'm going with a game plan. I'm going to do exactly what my trainer wants me to do. If he wants me to go in there and punch it out, then I'm going to go in there and punch it out. But I'm just going to take it round by round, listen to what he tells me to do, and that's how I'm going to do it.
So you guys are going to be heading out there, and this is for the IBF Female Super Bantamweight title. You know, what are some of the names you guys are working with to prepare for this fight? Who are some of the people that you had to get in the ring with?
After this fight, our promoter, SamsonBoxing.com, who is Samson Lukowitz, we have been promised a few opponents, maybe Jackie Nava, the WBC champion, maybe Ana Maria Torres. They're fighting next month. It's a good time for women's boxing, my man. They're finally starting to get a little recognition and a little pay. And we're peaking at just the right time.
Now, in terms of peaking at the right time, you know, and I'll go back to my question was, who do you guys work with, you know, in sparring-wise to be prepared? Because, you know, it's always said that there's not enough females out there to work on the craft, you know what I mean? So a lot of females have to spar against men. Is that in your guys' case? Are you sparring against men, or are there other females to get you prepared for your fight?
Answer the question, Melinda.
No, actually, no. I am sparring against guys, and I prefer it, actually, to tell you the truth. I mean, I do. My trainer honestly likes me to spar women, so that you know, I get used to it. But I rather spar men. I just think they're faster, stronger, and I got to work so much harder to stay at their pace to do well to compete when I spar. So I think I learn a lot more sparring men.
Let me patch in your promoter, Samson. Mr. Samson, are you on the line?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, sir. How are you doing?
Very good.
So,
little disappointed with you, to be honest.
Why? Why is that?
Because Melinda Cooper have a promoter that is the promoter of record in Costa Rica, and he's fighting a Puerto Rican. So he have nothing to do to be overseas. She be well safe, and the winner will, the referee will raise his hands. You know. So I cannot understand why you say that you need to knock out or you need to do the most. She's going to a friendly home that everybody likes to see her. She's known in Costa Rica. And the exclusive promoter of that event in Costa Rica is the promoter of Melissa.
Well,
Of
Melinda, yeah. You know, I'm just saying that a lot of times I've seen women that are leaving, you know, the States, they go over. They seem to get the short end of it, you know. Now, I wasn't aware that this is that.
Yeah,
not
in Melinda's case.
And
James is not... It's too smart to be taken for a ride, I can tell you that much. It's too smart for that.
Thank you,
he would
Jeff,
never
man.
Put in risk Melinda if she doesn't have the proper charges. I'm pretty sure that is the reason they're still undefeated, too, you know.
Right. Well, Sam, in terms of how you treat your fighters, I think it's very notable that you treat your fighters very well. You know, you don't treat them poorly at all. You know, you have a great reputation. We've spoken before. You know, you have a great fighter by the name of Sergio Martinez, and he seems to be very handled correctly and done right, rightfully so. Now, with Melinda Cooper here, what are we looking at here? I mean, what are we looking in terms of promoting her and getting her in the face of the public?
Well, whatever I promised to her, like I promised to every one of my athletes, I try to comply, and like I'm like a DNA, 99.9, I comply with my promise, and James and Melinda can tell you about it. But she needs to fight. It's a tough fight with a very experienced Puerto Rican, but James and Melinda is very confident that he will win, and hopefully he will come out with a victory. And then the next step, I will take her, probably the first defense, I like to do it in Las Vegas, in his own home, to enjoy the victory. And after that, it's for the big fights with the best fighters in the world. And I believe that it's time that it's not only you have to have a pedigree name like Lila Lee in one time. Now, mm-hmm. you don't need to be Lila Lee, and you can be well-recognized. And Melinda have all this way that she can be recognized and be acceptable in the boxing world, especially now that the female boxing, we expect to have the Olympics with the female tournament. So that it will bring to the next level for everyone, especially for Melinda.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to bring in my co-host and feature writer for Max Boxing, Gabriel Montoya. Gabriel, you have any questions for Samson or Melinda Cooper or James, the trainer?
I'm curious, mainly for Melinda, somewhat for Samson. She's never been stopped before, eight of 11. She has three losses, but they're hard-fought decision losses. One of them is a split decision. Is it important for you to make a statement in stopping her? And for Samson, do you think it's important that more knockouts happen in female boxing in order for them for the males that follow male boxing to begin to start accepting this sport?
Melinda, you want to answer first?
No, go ahead, Samson. You can answer first.
Well, I believe that. Well, let me put it that way. When I offered him, it was not like I choose the opponent in this case. It was a vacant title, and the number one contender, it was Melinda Cooper. The number three contender, it was Elda Velez. So it was no choice. If you want the title, you need to fight the best. The number two, it was not available. So I congratulate the IBF to this kind of fight. I believe this will be an excellent and very dangerous fight. But I have the beautiful and dangerous that it be Melinda. She's beautiful, but she's very dangerous. But she's a maravilla. She have she adopted the name of Sergio Maravilla, so it's La Maravilla. And I'm very happy to represent an athlete like her. Very honored.
And Melinda, do you feel you need to stop her, or is it just about winning for you?
No, honestly, a win's a win. How it comes is, I don't feel I need to stop her. If it happens, it happens. But I don't have the mentality to go in there, and that's my mentality, just to knock her out. I'm just gonna go with it in the fight, and if I feel I can take her out, then I'm gonna take her out. But I'm just gonna go in and give it my all, and I just want the win, so I can wrap that belt around my waist.
Samson, you're involved in female boxing. What do you think it is that keeps it from kind of going into the mainstream? And why do fans of male boxing not always cross over in their enjoyment of the female boxing? Why do you think?
Well, let me put it this way. The freedom of women, it takes longer, like always. Even now, there's a few parts of the Middle East that the women have no right to even to talk at the table. So we advance a lot on the females, because before, like, I was one of the leaders in Argentina to fight for the rights for the women to fight in Argentina. So now the most famous fighters is coming from Argentina, which means that everything it takes time, and I strongly believe that women deserve to get paid correctly. But I believe that after that, the Olympics, it'd be more credible, the sport of boxing, the female boxing.
Were you part of that? Is that really, because you're a guy that's known as having one of the great eyes for talent, and not just eyes for talent, but eyes for talent that no one else seems to notice. With Maravilla, you did it with Pacquiao. You have several other guys coming up, Javier Pochuno, who I just saw. Where does that come from? What is it that you're doing differently than everybody else?
I'm honest. I open books with my fighters. And I believe that it gives them an impulse to be a better fighter, because it doesn't get cheap. That's all.
Right, right.
No, but look, you cannot teach talent. You cannot teach a boxer a talent. You can teach defense. You can teach everything, but no talent. Talent is you're born with that, or you get your pedigree. And with the matchmaking, or to have a good eyes, to find out the right fighters, is you need to born with a talent that you don't know about it. And I didn't know that I have that such a talent.
How are we going to be able to see this? Is this going to be televised here, Samson, to watch Melinda Cooper?
It's very sad that there was no interest whatsoever in any of the network, the American network. No one. I offered this three world championship fights to everyone, including small channels, so nobody was interested. And that is the problem with the female boxing, that we didn't gain the respect from the network. This network is supposed to be shame.
Wow.
And it's the only way to get to them is if the public send, you know, letters to the president that you want to see female boxing too, and if you get a lot of the president of the network companies, then maybe one day it will be acceptable. But for now, we have no support.
Melinda, does that frustrate you in any way, knowing that you're not going to be televised and that, you know, all this hard work is not going to be witnessed around the world?
No, it doesn't frustrate me. I understand, and hopefully soon it will be televised, but no, it doesn't frustrate me at all.
It doesn't disappoint you at all, though? I mean
it does disappoint. I mean, it's kind of sad when people ask all the time, are you going to be televised? Can I check it out? And I always have to say no, because they're like, Sam says they won't televise women, but hopefully soon they'll start.
Do you feel you're part of a movement, though? I mean, you know, Claudia is definitely, she's been the spokeswoman for you guys that I've seen right now for women's boxing. Do you feel like you're part of a movement that hopefully you guys can change the minds of networks and boxing and male boxing fans into witnessing you guys? Because, I don't know, Samson, is she getting paid the amount of money that a male fighter is getting paid for a title?
Definitely not. I wish I could, but definitely not. It's not the case. We're still in the old timers. It's very hard to even express my disappointed that based that is no, absolutely no TV, that you cannot pay with the gate.
Uh-huh.
You know, that is the reality. You cannot pay with the gate, and all this is very frustrating for women boxing, because the TV is the one that it pay for the big fights.
Right, right. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of sad that you're not getting that money and you're not getting that recognition, Melinda. But I tell you what, we're still going to be pulling for you here on Leaving in the Ring, and hopefully, you know, there's a light at the end of that tunnel. So, hey, come back with that title, you know, in Costa Rica.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for coming on, you and James. And Samson, thank you for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving in the Ring. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, I know. It's my pleasure. But the only thing I can say that I will fight for my fighters. I will fight for the female boxing to go to the next level. And God willing, he will get paid each one that he deserves.
Absolutely. There you go, brother. Thank you again for coming on.
Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate
it. And definitely
it.
God bless America.
Hey, James, thanks too, brother.
Thank you. Thanks, Claudia. Thanks, Samson. We'll see you soon.
There you go. Melinda Cooper is going to be taking off to Costa Rica so that she could get in the ring and hopefully bring back her title. Really quick, I'm going to bring in Claudia. Hey, Claudia, what's up? How you doing?
Hey, you left me out here. It's all good.
You know what? You had all this wind going. What are you doing with the top down, driving down the avenues?
It's all good. It was great. Samson's got the right idea. You know, I'm doing my thing out here and trying to get the girls the recognition that they need here in the United States. So I'm really working really hard toward that. So I'm hoping that with, you know, people like Samson and other big promoters that have embraced women's boxing, I know that we can do something really big here real soon. And I hope to be announcing my big project real soon as well. So I'm looking forward
Absolutely.
To that.
Absolutely. You know, and you've been a very huge, you know, a supporter and spokesperson, like I said, for the women's boxing movement. And just continue to keep doing what you're doing. And you'll definitely still have our support here on Leaving the Ring. Thank you for bringing on Melinda Cooper, too. It's just, it sucks that she's not going to be televised. So even though we do have a chance to interview her and hear her, we don't have the chance to witness and watch her, you know, which is kind of it's kind of tough
that's
for her end. And it's, what was that?
Yeah, that's a shame. You know, it really truly is, and that's my goal. That's my goal, to get these women televised. That's been my goal. That's been my platform since last year. So I'm hoping and really working toward that to make that happen.
Well, hopefully that will change, you know, soon. Again, Claudia, thank you for calling in. And, hey, stay out of the weather. Don't be driving with the top down. You're going to get sick. Going to catch pneumonia.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night. Thank you for having us on.
No problem, you know.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There you go. You know, I think we had a pretty good show, informative, a lot of fighters calling in and speaking to us about upcoming fights. We do have a lot of things up in works. You know, I had said in the beginning of March that we have something to announce. As soon as it's ready, it's not ready yet because March ain't over. It's supposed to happen as soon as March is over. We'll announce it. It's going to benefit a lot of fight fans that do tune in to Leaving the Ring and they want to, you know, join in the chat room or they can't listen to it live because the fact is that they're either working or different, you know, it's just time sometimes gets in the way, you know, and they can't get it on their phone or they can't get this. But we're working on a way where you can get it live all the time and you'll be able to catch up with the archives and catch up what's going on the websites, you know, because we do have Noche de Boxeo, which is holding very strong. They had a round table just this past Saturday. These guys are really shining and kind of really finding their niche into the radio of Spanish, Noche de Boxeo. If you haven't had a chance to check that out, you definitely got to go over there and support all the fellas that do Noche de Boxeo because these guys are doing a fantastic job and they're putting in a lot of hard work here for the boxing fans. Gabriel, you got the fight schedule, Gabriel?
You know, let me pull it up here just 1 second. I didn't realize we're so deep into the show, man. Tonight has just flown right by. I mean, it's, I guess when we do guest after guest after guest, it's just how it rolls. One second, and I will have this pulled up for you, and here we go. On March 25th, Friday, 2011, in the Cosmopolitan Resort in Las Vegas, Nevada, we have Arislandi Lara, 15-0, versus Carlos Molina, 17-4-1. This is on ESPN2. Lara is, working with Ronnie Shields. I did an article today that's out on Max Boxing, talking about his development in the pros from the amateurs. Really, to me, you know, not your typical Cuban guy. He's in that he's not kind of a, you know, a southpaw cutie. He is a southpaw, but he's pretty aggressive, and Ronnie's really worked hard to make him so. Molina hasn't fought in about 2 years, but he was coming off a big win. I'm not really sure, maybe it was managerial issues that kind of sidelined him. But this is a tough guy. He's got, you know, 4 losses, but he's going to be something of a test, I think, for Lara. And if he's able to get him out of there, that should be a nice notch on Lara's belt. Underneath that in support is Udell Johnson, 9-0 versus Richard Gutierrez, 26-5-1. It's definitely a developmental fight. It's another Cuban fighter as well. Came over with Guillermo Rigondo. It's kind of been more under the radar. He's a little more of a raw project than the other guys, but also kind of a guy that likes to get it. Not sure about the power, but should be a good fight. Hyland Williams will also be fighting on that card, 12-0 versus James Lester, 9-4. And then the same night at the Sports Center in Fairfield, California, can't wait for this fight on Telepictura, Antonio Escalante, 24-3 versus Alejandro Perez, 14-2-1. We've already talked about that at length. We're both going. Actually, who are you picking in that, Dave?
On the what fight? Antonio Escalante?
Yeah.
Oh, I was picking Alejandro Alagran Perez. I think he's going to take him. I think he's going to stop him in the late rounds, to tell you the truth. I think them body shots are just going to be way too much. I mean, he's a strong, strong kid. And, you know, putting in the work that he does at the wild card. But you know, we talked about being overtrained because he gets fights canceled. I mean, he has fights being canceled and things are just being done to him in terms of getting fights, that he could come in overtrained and, you know, just not, you know, just not being ready, you know, for Escalante.
Yeah.
Escalante has been a little bit more active, and he's been consistent, you know, even though he's been knocked out. I think that's the only question is whether or not taking a big punch, is he going to be able to hold up to that from a strong puncher? You know, Alejandro's not that one-punch type of guy. He's one of those guys, he's a workhorse, he's going to work you, you know, wear you down and stuff, but he is a strong, strong kid that's going to be right there in your face. But I don't know, Gabe. I'm just leaning towards Alejandro. I think that he may be a little bit too much and too hungry for Antonio. You know, but not taking nothing away from Antonio Escalante. He's a hell of a fighter. But I really see. If anything, I think my prediction is going to be this: the fight fans are going to walk away the happiest. You know, in Fairfield and on television.
Yeah, it's going to be that kind of fight. You know, if it's early, I think it's Escalante. If it's late, looking at Perez, you know, it just kind of depends. It's such a 50-50 fight, I have trouble really picking it. But that's how I look at it. You know, if it's under like 4 or 5 rounds, then it's Escalante with his power. If you get past that, I think Perez has more and more of a chance as the fight goes on. So I'm not really making a pick. I'm making a safe pick. Also, you know, at the Doubletree, Ontario, Efron Escavillas. I keep screwing it up. But he'll be at the Doubletree. You want to check out that card. It should be nice and stacked with some prospects and some veterans, but a good night at the fights if you're in that area. March 26th, Saturday, 2011, at the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey, in the smaller room, but it's going to be jam-packed. HBO, Yuriorkis Gamboa, 19-0 versus Jorge Solis, 42-2. This is for the IBF featherweight belt. In support of that, excellent fight, HBO, Mikey Garcia, 24-0 versus Matt Remillard, 23-0. I'm going with Mikey Garcia on that one. I think, Dave, you tend to agree with me.
Yes.
We're both picking Gamboa. At the Sports Palace in Russia, Dmitry Pirog, 17-0.
Pirog, that's right.
Versus Javier Maciel. And we actually do have time to break this down once I get with the finish with this fight schedule, because I have done some research on this. This actually will be televised on ESPN3 on Saturday at noon. So you will be able to check this fight out. This is for the WBO middleweight belt. And then on the same night at the Nasrec Indoor Arena in Johannesburg, South Africa, Steve Molitor, 33-1 versus Takalani and Lovdu. No. Something. I don't know. Look it up. Hard to pronounce. 31-6. IBF junior featherweight belt. And at the Universum Gym in Hamburg, Germany, Alexander Dimitrenko, 30-1, versus Albert Sosnowski, 46-3-1. It's a tough fight. I'm very curious about it. It's, you know, Sosnowski's kind of, you know, a journeyman guy, but he can be kind of tough. And Dimitrenko is a guy that I think he still needs to be put back in the oven. He's not done cooking. So it's kind of a toss-up fight. If you get a chance to find a stream for that, do so. I think it could be actually a pretty decent fight. And
you know,
that is your weekend fight schedule.
You know, going back to Pirog, Dmitry Pirog, who's going to be fighting Javier Francisco Maciel, he's an Argentina fighter who's been pretty much in Argentina, okay? You know what, Gabe, break this down, because I got a call. I have to take this call. Hold on. Good. Break this.
Pirog versus Maciel? Absolutely. Now, Maciel is a guy, I've actually watched some tape of him, quite a few bits of tape, actually. He's kind of a come-forward guy, but he's not your typical come-forward guy in that he doesn't have, like, a really strong jab. He kind of uses more of, like, a rangefinder jab that you would see more on a mover. But he does dig to the body. He tends to use kind of a winging uppercut, though, when he goes to the body, but he hits hard. At the same time, you know, he's got one loss. He was kind of in the middle of his career. It was a TKO in 4. It was actually originally, I believe, like a technical decision loss, and then they changed it to a TKO. I'm not quite sure why. I haven't seen the fight yet. But he's a guy that's never fought out of Argentina. He's out of, I believe, Malvinas, Argentinas, and Buenos Aires. So he's a guy that
is 26 years old and a full middleweight. He's fought his whole career there. I'm just kind of wondering if this is more like when Sergio Martinez at 14-0, came to the States and fought Antonio Margarito and was kind of blasted
right.
out because he was a guy that only fought in Argentina, had no experience, wasn't ready. But you look at Pirog, and yeah, he's 30, but he's only got 17 fights himself. And I was talking
exactly.
to a Russian guy just recently that knew him in the amateurs and knew him well and said, because Jenny Jacobs was not ready in that fight or was green, he felt that Pirog might have looked better than we really think he is. And I've seen a lot of tape of Pirog, and there are times when he looks like just a guy. That night,
right.
he raised his game to a whole other level, and that's kind of what it's all about. But he's also been off since, July, I believe. Yeah, July of 2010.
Exactly.
So,
right.
we're going to see what's up. I'm actually been scheduled. We've been trying to figure out when to talk. I'm supposed to talk to Pirog, I think, sometime in the middle of the night here, because he's in Russia, and they're going to give me
right.
a call. So hopefully I'll have an interview with him. Right before the fight.
This is a good fight. In terms of, we don't know a whole lot about him, Javier, but, you're absolutely right. This is a guy that's got a pretty good stellar record. It's not going to be I'm not going to say he's going to be an easy win. He's definitely going to, this is a guy that can really bring up his A game leaving Argentina and to face Pirog. This is something that Pirog wants to continue his streak to. He can end up back in the States, and Javier Francisco can definitely stop that train from, it will stop the boat from sailing back to the States. But really quick, Gabe, I want to patch in a friend of ours who's he has a fighter, he's a trainer, Ruben Guerrero's fighter, Clinton. He's going to be fighting this Friday. I want to hear his take about Alejandro and Antonio Escalante. So I'm going to patch him in. Is that okay?
Yeah, works for me.
Let's see if we can get him in right now. That's what was calling me. That's what I was like, hey, I got to take this call really quick. Let's see if we can get him in.
What's your name?
Hello? Ruben, what's up, brother?
Sorry. This is Clint.
Hey, Clint, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. Hey, so you're fighting this Friday on Solo Boxeo over there in Fairfield.
Out here in Fairfield.
I know, all the way down to Fairfield. Well, it's not that bad. It's not, it's actually a decent drive, but with this weather, it's kind of horrific.
Pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah, Clint, your last name really quick, because I always seem to forget your last name.
Last name is Coronel, Coronel.
Cornell, there you go. And you're going to be stepping in. Who are you supposed to be facing?
I was supposed to be fighting on Robert's undercard the 9th in Vegas against some Canadian dude, but he didn't want to fight. So now they got me on against Carlos Moskowitz.
Carlos Moskowitz. Okay, so you're not going to be on the April 9th card after all with Robert the Ghost Guerrero, huh?
Ruben Guerrero, my manager, got me on the Canadian duties. I think he's from Montreal. He didn't want to fight, so he got me a fight here, so I was pretty happy with that.
So is this at 154 or 160? Because I know you're a pretty big guy.
150, man. I didn't get down 150 today.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So it was easy.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, you're what, 5'10", 5'11"?
Yeah, about 5'10".
Okay. So, how are you feeling? I mean, how are you feeling about this fight?
I feel good, man. I feel like I'm in really, really, really good shape. We've been sparring with a lot of guys. In Gilroy, we went sparring with the Brandon Rios guy. We went up to San Mateo, sparred with him. We sparred with, got Robert ready a little bit before he went to his camp in Las Vegas. We sparred with Eloy Perez a lot, man, all the time. Got some Salinas and all these kind of. We got everybody. It's like a smorgasbord of dudes to come up there.
Now I've seen you a few times spar. I saw one time when you had sparred Robert the Ghost. I saw you when you were sparring Eloy Perez. That was actually we have that up on YouTube. And you can see the size difference between you.
Yeah,
and
he's fast though.
Yeah, he's a quick kid. He's got a great jab. Now with Brandon Rios, okay. There's another 135 pounder, but. When you were sparring him, what was he, at 150? Because, Brandon's not
a
small 60, guy.
He's pushing 60s.
Yeah, he's a big kid. I think a lot of people don't understand how big he is,
He's big. He's a big dude, about 160 when I was sparring with him up in San Mateo.
Damn, 160. Gabe, you hear that? And he's making 135.
Wow.
That is just crazy. You know, I mean,
that's amazing.
It is.
Yeah.
Clint, can you make 135?
Can I make it? For hell no. I'm happy being big.
Happy being big, you know. Oh, man. Hey, let me talk to Ruben really quick, your trainer.
Yeah, Ruben.
What's going on, buddy? Here we are, resting in the hotel.
Orale. What hotel they got you guys stayed at over there? I mean, hey, Fairfield, Fairfield has hotels?
Yes, they do. I had to choke up on that for a little bit there when you said that. I mean, I didn't know where I was coming. I thought I was a stick, went over a couple of bridges, and here we are. The rain hit hard, and we're actually at the Marriott. We're at the Marriott. They had a good buffet. The weigh-ins were good. I mean, it's actually, they got a nice card over here. You know, I'm surprised, you know, and we're liking it and we're digging it.
You know, I kind of regret that I'm not going to go to this card. I'm sending Mario Ortega, our writer, to this fight because bro, I had no idea that Alejandro Alacrán was going to be on the headliner to fight Antonio Escalante. That's such a great fight right there.
Yeah, it's actually Alejandro Perez out of Salinas. I mean, that guy's really good. I seen Alejandro from the amateurs coming all the way up, him and his brother. I mean, he's just followed me. He's just followed Robert. I mean, and he's followed my brother Dick and a bunch of other kids. But he's been out there training up in Wild Card.
Right.
You know, but now that he's hearing that, I mean, there's a lot of banging going on in the Guerrero gym and Gilroy. I mean, it's like a shock right now to everybody, and people are coming down. And then, I mean, you've been there. You know how it
right.
is. I mean, it's rowdy in there. It's like a mini Wild Card in the Bay Area. So
yeah, it is. You know, I've seen a few names walk in there, and I've seen you guys not even let up. You guys just mix it up. And which I got to make it back out there too, man, because you guys do some really good sparring. And I'm really excited for Alejandro. I mean, I followed him from when he barely, I think when he was barely getting into the Wild Card, when I started kind of witnessing him, and he was leaving Salinas, and now he's full-time up there, man. And, you know, let me ask you, Ruben, really quick, who do you got for this fight? What's your take on this fight here?
I'm looking, you know, Escalante came in 2.5 pounds overweight.
Oh.
He's still cutting weight right now to make it as we speak. I mean, this is the inside.
I'll change my pick.
We're live right now, and Alejandro came in 1.5 pounds under, and I mean, Alejandro looks in shape. I've seen him, and he looks in better shape when he fought the gentleman he fought a year and a half ago. I mean, you can see the fire in his eyes, you know, so that's the main event. Clint's the co-main event, you know, fighting Carlos Moskowitz, and then, I mean, here we are, Team Guerrero with Cornell, and I mean, doing what we got to do, what we do best is breathe boxing and cruise cars.
That's it, man. That's it.
That's it.
Oh, man, I'm excited about it. I'm really excited about it, man. Well, everyone,
Escalante already look dried out and then had to make two more pounds?
I'm going to talk. I mean, he looked like a prune, you know?
Right.
You know, that's all fighters, you know, but he'll probably come back in his weight. He'll probably come in like 140, 142 around there. But, you know how it is. Fighters stack after.
Right.
I mean, Alejandro was like the bigger guy. I mean,
really?
He looked, compared to him, I mean, he looked like 1.5 feet taller. I mean, so stronger. You know, and I was talking to him in the lobby. They go, "How you doing, bud?" And he goes, "I'm feeling great. I haven't felt like this in a long time, Ruben." You can see the fire in his eyes. You know, and he's ready to come back and hang in with the big boys in Gilroy, you know what I mean? And then hang out and start sparring with the Ghost and Eloy and Clint and a few other guys that will be coming down, you know, out there. So, you know, but it's going to be good. You know, I'm proud to see him. I haven't seen him in a while. I haven't seen him in a year. So, you know, and they're the main event. We're the co-main event. You know, it's two guys from the Bay Area representing Solo Boxeo.
Yeah, definitely, man. I'm excited. I'm gonna have to witness it from TV, unless I just go get some tickets and head out there and stuff. Man, I gotta make it out there. This is an exciting card, man. I'm really pumped up about it.
You know, actually, this card is gonna be actually a little bit better than the last card up in Frisco.
Right.
And we got a couple of guys up in San Francisco gonna be on that card, and I mean, I've never been out here, but you know, so far that I'm seeing, it's looking good. You know, everybody's got, you know, it's been made, and we brought Moskowitz and Cornell in as a co-main event. And
is it going to be at that same
place? Clint's a tough guy.
Right. No. Clint's a really tough guy. Is it going to be at that same place in Fairfield where it's like almost like that gym in the park?
You know, I'll tell you the truth. I haven't been to the area yet. But so far, I just made it to the Marriott and I made it safe.
Well, just wear your prom shoes, man, because it looks like a prom dance there. It's really compact there, but it's a pretty good venue. I'm not taking it away from. It's a pretty good venue.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, Fairfield's a fight. It's a little fight town. You know, it looks
like
you're in the sticks, but it's a fight town. Definitely a fight town.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I guess that's what they're doing out here. But I still sell tickets in the parking lot.
Oh.
I'm just messing around.
That's funny.
All right, Ruben. Hey, brother. Hey, I wish you the best of luck, you and your fighter there, Clinton. And I'm going to try to make it out there, brother. If not, man, hit me up after. Let me know how the results are, or I'll hit you up. Either way, we'll get in contact.
All right, you take care. I'll see you guys April 9th, HBO pay-per-view, Las Vegas.
There you go. We'll see you there, brother.
You go, the ghost, baby. You take care. Thank you.
Okay, guys.
All right, man.
Well, there you go. I had to get him in really quick, man, just because they're going to be on that fight card. And I wanted to hear what he had to say about Alejandro Perez because, I have Alejandro Perez's number, but on my other phone, Gabe, and now the phone's not working. It's not charging anymore. I'd like to call Alejandro just to chop it up with them and ask him how things are doing. But I guess I'm going to have to catch up with them a little later. Once again, hey, it was a great show, always fun. Here with my co-host Gabriel Montoya. I'm going to be up there with him in L.A. next week. We're going to be hanging out. We're working on a new project. We'll soon announce that new project because it'll be ready in April, beginning of April. We have two new things that are going to be popping up in the beginning of April. If you want to send us some feedback or if you have any questions, you want to shine in the mailbag, you can. leavingtheRing@gmail.com. Please support the website, leavingtheRing.com. And you can see a lot of great articles that our writers are posting up. I got a couple articles I have to post up later on tonight that have been sent to me. Again, if you want to send us some mail, you can at leavingtheRing@gmail.com. And always support leavingtheRing.com, the website, and NocheDeBoxeo.com as well, our Spanish station, our sister station that's all in Spanish, And be sure to always support Gabriel on Max Boxing. Check out his articles. They're always in-depth, always informative, and they're always straight to the point. Well, Gabe, what do you got to say, brother?
That's about it. I'm pretty excited about the – I'm changing my pick. I'm taking Alejandro Perez for one. After hearing that, I'm like, that's a lock. But I'm really excited. I actually had a chance to speak with Robert Guerrero yesterday. I'm writing. He's being honored with an award by the Boxing Writers Association of America for courage under adversity, for being able to fight while his wife and him were together, fighting cancer. And man, it would have just an absolutely touching experience. I mean, just to talk to him, hear him specifically. We didn't even really talk about the Katsidas fight. We'll talk later about that. But we just spoke about what they went through, man. And it was very intense. And I'm pretty honored to have the Writers Association ask me to write basically like a 500-word essay about his experiences as part of the program, and I think as part of his introduction for his award. So I'm looking forward to writing that probably later tonight and getting that done. But man, what a guy, just what an inspirational person. And, just keeping it, not even dealing with that fight, but just talking to him and hearing what he's been through. I didn't realize they'd been together since they were 14 years old. So it wasn't just, I mean, everybody's wife, I imagine, is, means something to them, but this is the only
right.
person he's ever loved. I just was kind of overwhelmed hearing that. So, I'll be getting that out, and maybe when it's done, maybe get a print of that for fans to read. But another good show, Dave, and it's going to be a great weekend of fights, dude. I can't wait. So I'll catch up with you next week, and it's going to be a very special show next Thursday. So I can't wait.
Oh, that's right. It's going to be your birthday next Thursday live. We're
yes,
going to have Gabriel Montoya's birthday on this show. So if you want to call in and say, happy birthday, Gabe, you can. Again,
yeah,
man, it's always a pleasure, talking it up with the – chopping it up with the boxing fans, and having the fighters come on and speak to us. And really giving us just a chance to do this is just a privilege for myself and for Gabriel and everybody else that works with Leaving in the Ring. David Chan, our producer, does a fine, fine job every time that it comes out, every Thursday. The man behind the scenes that really makes the wheels turn on Leaving in the Ring, Dave Chan, please give him his props, because he is the guy that keeps us going here on Leaving in the Ring. Make sure that everything is flowing properly here on Leaving in the Ring. Okay, brothers, again, it was another great show. Until next week, you guys be careful in this weather. Don't drive, don't drink and drive, and enjoy the fights Friday night and Saturday night. I'm going to be on Twitter pretty heavily on both those nights, man. I know I've been kind of slacking on my Twitter movement. My fingers have been sore, and I need to exercise them because my thumb is starting to get fat. So I will get back on Twitter on both those nights, so be sure to chop it up with me or follow us on Twitter. It's Leave It in the Ring, all capital letters, just the LIITR boxing, all capital letters. So I'll talk to you guys later and talk to you shortly, which will be Thursday next week.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.